never say anything at all. But with nothing to consider, they forget my name. They call me
GFW.
They call me
Global Force Wrestling.
They call me
GFW.
They call me
Global Force Wrestling.
That's not my name.
Walking around trying to figure out what my name is.
It's business time, baby.
The Solid Monster sounds off.
My client.
Mama Monster.
Conquered history.
This doesn't make any sense.
Your title belt is made of leather. You're not a real vegan.
He's fat, delete.
You haven't been beat up properly.
Woo!
Welcome to episode 514 of the Solid Monster Sounds Off here for Sunday, September 24th, 2017. I am the Solid Monster, a little under the weather this week, so hopefully you are having a better weekend than I. And also the people in Puerto Rico, you know, I have to say this right off the bat, my thoughts are with, we have a lot of listeners who are down in that area, down in Puerto Rico. I know they are devastated this week after the effects of Hurricane Maria, who just destroyed, Maria just destroyed the bunch of islands down there, and Puerto Rico is without power. They may be without power now for up to 6 months, and it's just a terrible situation. And it could, one person said, it could take up to 15 years to fully rebuild it back to what it was before. That is unreal. And then, of course, there was a magnitude 7 earthquake in Mexico. Feels like Armageddon in the world right now. Hopefully I can take your mind off that here for the next 2 hours. And we'll start with Audible. I want to mention this because I was promoting the new Ric Flair book. It's about Ric and Charlotte Flair. It's called Second Nature, The Legacy of Ric Flair and the Rise of Charlotte. It is now available. Brian Shields is the author. I'm hoping to get a copy of the book here from the publisher in the next week or two, and I'm going to try to break into the book myself, which if I do, I can then review it here on the show. But the audiobook version was supposed to be available, and it was pushed back, and then it was supposed to be available last week, and apparently it has been indefinitely pulled. So if any of you, and I know some of you got some emails from Audible mentioning this, it's not a problem that is unique to you. Unfortunately, for whatever the reason is, and I'll try to find out, the audio version, at least for now, is unavailable. So I apologize for that. But you can use our Audible link to cash in on any other book, any of the other 180,000 titles they have available in their store. Audibletrial.com/Solomonster. You plug that link in, sign up. You will activate your 30-day trial. You will not be billed unless you go beyond those 30 days if you really like the service. But even if you just say, you know what, this really isn't for me, you get to keep one free audiobook that you are entitled to cash in as part of your 30-day trial. And there's a ton of wrestling books, as you guys well know. Daniel Bryan's book, Brock Lesnar, Chris Jericho, Shawn Michaels, Steve Austin, Hulk Hogan. I could go on and on. A lot of great books are up there. So take advantage. Audibletrial.com/Solomonster and get yourself a free audiobook. Also, don't forget we have the new 10-year anniversary Sound Off shirt in our store on Pro Wrestling Tees. As we are heading to the 10-year anniversary show in early November, we are now less than 2 months away. Actually, only a little more than a month away now, I guess. If you do, by the way, buy a Sound Off shirt, whatever shirt it may be sure to tweet me a photo. I'll give you a retweet. And thank you so much to everybody who just continues to support the show via PayPal. Making donations there, thesolomonster.com. You'll see the PayPal button on the right-hand side of the page. $10 or more will get you a wrestling nickname and a shout-out here on the show. And just to go through roll call real quick here, so say thank you to John Loose Cannon Lopez, Deadpool James Herrera, Beast Mode Brock Joseph, Out of Control Cody Thomas, Luis Hercules Hernandez, Raymond the Mountie Medina, who I was very happy to hear back from. I shot him a tweet because he's down in Puerto Rico. And he had tweeted me right before the storm that he was, I think, going to a shelter and he was going to try to, you know, stay safe. And then I didn't hear from him and I was worried. But I did end up hearing from Ray. Thankfully, he's safe and sound. So I'm thinking about you, Ray. Velvet Revolver, Robert Murray, Brian the Cleaver Carpenter, Killshot, Keith Hart, Aim for the Head, Andrew Jorlog, Stephen Handyman, Halistic, Davis the Empire, Enos, the Wilmington Warlord, Tyler Williams, the Chicago Slayer, Willie Eichard, the Malaysian Mastermind, Samuel T., Luis the Belmont Sentinel, Alejandro, the Show-Off, Corey Van Dam, Too Bad, Trey Marquis, Caleb Blackout Brinkman, who is a first-time donator who's been listening to the show for a few years now, so thank you to Caleb. And last but not least here, we have Tom Bodybag Hemstock, who celebrated a birthday on Wednesday. So happy birthday to Tom. Unfortunately, we have some sad news to open with here. As you are all well aware, Bobby the Brain Heenan, the greatest manager and easily one of the greatest overall performers in the history of the wrestling business, passed away this week. You guys know my fondness for Bobby the Brain. He really is my all-time favorite. If I think of my favorite wrestler, it would be Bret Hart. But if I just think of my overall favorite in wrestling, honestly, it probably is Bobby Heenan. I mean, I'm trying to rack my brain to see who would be in that top spot, and I keep coming back to Bobby. So his death hit me pretty hard. I know it hit a lot of people very hard. He was a product of their childhood, as he was of mine. And I have over 40 minutes of audio up, only a few hours after the news broke of his death. I didn't want to wait until this weekend, so I hopped on the YouTube machine there, and I uploaded a sound off extra, over 40 minutes talking about nothing but the life and times of Bobby the Brain Heenan, and I've gotten a lot of really positive feedback to that, a lot of really cool tweets and emails from people who really enjoyed it, so I want to thank them for that. I also ended up pushing it out to the main feed a few days later, so you whether you're on YouTube or you're just subscribed through iTunes or Stitcher or what have you, the show was pushed out. Hopefully you all had a chance to listen to it. If not, it's up on YouTube. Definitely check it out. Give it a like. Leave a comment if you would be so kind. I saw that the 1992 Royal Rumble cracked the top 10 most watched shows this week on the WWE Network, which brought a smile to my face. That should have been number one. I think it was like number 8 or something in the rankings in the Observer, but that was very cool. As far as WWE's tribute to Bobby Heenan, I thought they did a very nice job with that video package they put. I mean, they always do a very nice job with these videos, but that was a very cool little tribute they put together for him. You know, they had the Twitter highlights all throughout the show before or coming back from some of the commercial breaks where they would, you know, put different tweets up on the screen from people in the wrestling industry and in WWE, and so that was cool. I'm puzzled by the fact that there was not even a mention, I don't believe, unless they had the graphic at the very beginning and I missed it, but there was really no mention of Bobby Heenan at all. No real tribute to him at all on SmackDown on Tuesday night. So if you didn't watch Raw and you only watch SmackDown, and some of you do, some of you have given up on Monday Night Raw and do not watch, but you tune in on Tuesdays, you would never even know the man died. So I was puzzled by that, and I didn't like that. Also, no 10-bell salute. I thought if anybody was worthy of a 10-bell salute, it was Bobby Heenan. I know Randy Savage didn't get one either, which was just ridiculous. It's kind of weird who gets them and who doesn't. And I thought Bobby Heenan and the impact he had on that company and the impact he had on that on the industry, if anybody deserved that kind of treatment, it would have been Bobby Heenan. And on Raw or SmackDown, the main shows, he did not get that. And yet, NXT, at their live event this week in Lowell, Massachusetts, gave Bobby Heenan a 10-bell salute before the show started. So leave it to NXT to do the right thing while they drop the ball on the main roster. Sounds like a familiar pattern there. Now, apparently WWE was filming interviews backstage at TV this week with the talent for some sort of Bobby Heenan special that is going to air in the future on the WWE Network. They already have a Bobby Heenan collection up on the network, for those who aren't aware, so you might want to head over and check that out. And there really isn't anything else to say. I said my piece in my Sound Off Extra on Bobby. He was the best. There'll never be another like him. He was entertaining. He could be serious when he had to be serious. More often than not, he was humorous. Lots of classic moments, obviously the barbershop, obviously the his announcing performance at the Rumble in 92. And you think of some of the comedy matches he had with people like the Ultimate Warrior and the Red Rooster and the Big Boss Man, and he would constantly berate the Boss Man's mother. I remember that Primetime Wrestling episode where Mr. Perfect came out of retirement and he turned on Bobby Heenan and poured the water on his head. I mean, there's so many memorable moments, let alone all those Primetime Wrestling skits with him and Monsoon, which are just some of the best television I think they've ever produced. Those two had a natural chemistry that very few people, I think, in the history of this company have had. You know, JR and King had it. I mean, you can, you know, Austin and Rock, right? You can find certain duos that just had this natural chemistry. I don't know that any of them had as natural a chemistry and played off each other as well as Heenan and Monsoon. And I've used this analogy before. I'm a big Abbott and Costello fan from back in the day. You know, I love Abbott and Costello, and they were the Abbott and Costello of WWE. They really were, and that's meant as a compliment. So, and I will forever be grateful that I had the chance to meet Bobby and shake his hand and get my picture taken with him a few years ago. So very happy that I was able to do that. You know, at WrestleCon this year, I got to meet Demolition and Mean Gene is another one. I got to interview him, and those are some moments that kind of stick with me. And I'm happy that meeting Bobby was one of the things I was able to do. So, again, check it out on the feed. It's up on YouTube if you want to hear some Bobby Heenan stories and hear about his career. All that is up there. There is a Raw pay-per-view tonight, so I think I probably should cover my Raw thoughts real quick here first and then run through my predictions before I get into anything else, because there is a lot of other stuff, a bunch of news items to get to. So first, Raw, last week, it was in San Jose, California. The Twitter poll had over 1,700 votes, 44% thumbs up, 56% thumbs down. So the streak is over. I believe it has been many, many weeks since Raw has gotten an overall thumbs down rating. And so that's never a good sign, especially if you're a go-home show heading into a big pay-per-view. Jason Jordan won a six-pack challenge here on this show to challenge The Miz for the Intercontinental Championship at No Mercy tonight. He beat The Drifter, Matt and Jeff Hardy, Bo Dallas, and Curtis Axel. He pinned Axel with the mid-air neckbreaker. I said last week, he had two good showings, one against John Cena and one against Roman Reigns. He lost both matches, which he should have, because John Cena and Roman Reigns going into their match at the pay-per-view should not be losing to Jason Jordan. But I thought he looked good in both matches. But I said, now it's time for him to win. Okay, it's one thing to look good and to show off your suplexes and hang with the big boys, but at some point you have to start winning matches. And he won a big match this week, so that's good. Now, he's still not over. In time, hopefully he will be. Jeff Hardy, by the way, according to Pro Wrestling Sheet, has a shoulder injury. Might require surgery, we're not sure yet. That would put him out for several months if that happened. Apparently, he injured the shoulder taking a bump in that Iron Man match at Great Balls of Fire back in July, and he's been working on it ever since, so naturally, it has not gotten better. If anything, it's gotten worse. And, you know, I think if Jeff had to go out, let's say Jeff has surgery and he's out for like 6 months, you know, boy, this sure would be a good time for Matt to become broken again if Jeff has to go away, and it sucks for him that he can't use it. I hope he's been working on a plan B. I said that weeks ago, that this broken thing is not going to be resolved anytime soon, if ever. And he has to have a plan B to fall back on. Because just plain old Matt Hardy, especially if he's all by himself, that's just not going to cut it. You know, we know Matt can be a very entertaining guy, but there's got to be more to it than just, you know, classic Matt Hardy coming out in wrestling matches. So I sure hope he's got a plan B. Nia Jax pinned Alexa Bliss with a Samoan drop in a non-title match. Sasha Banks came out to stop Alexa from bailing. That led to the finish. And Bayley here in San Jose in her hometown, out to a nice reaction, making her big comeback. Sasha, Bayley, and Alexa all teamed up for one big spear on Nia. I thought Alexa was great here. She's kind of in there fighting alongside Sasha and Bayley like they're best friends, and she's got a big fat smile on her face, and of course Sasha and Bayley turn on her and lay her out. Bayley has been added to the title match tonight, I guess because she was due that title shot at SummerSlam before she got hurt, even though she didn't really deserve it. It should have been Sasha and Alexa all along, but Bayley had earned the right to challenge for the championship and then got hurt, so it makes sense, I guess, that they would insert her into the match. Personally, I think she should have had to go to the back of the line the way that Finn Balor did. Finn Balor never got his rematch when he came back from his injury. Never even got a rematch. And he was the champion. Wasn't even like he was the number one contender and then lost his opportunity. He was the champion. Came back and doesn't seem overly concerned about getting that Universal title back. Emma was the only one missing here. I guess she stayed a few extra days. They were on tour in Australia. She stayed a few extra days to visit with family. I thought it was very weird how all of them were out there on Monday and Emma was just MIA. I thought for a moment maybe Bayley took her spot. Maybe they had second thoughts and they said, why is Emma in this match? And they took her out. But apparently she is still in it. Sheamus and Cesaro are now calling themselves The Bar. As in, they do not set the bar, they are the bar. So keep Ric Flair away from them. They won a three-way match over Anderson and Gallows and Rollins and Ambrose. So that, I guess, gives them some credibility heading into their championship rematch tonight with The Shield. We had Goldust wearing his Goldust attire here on this show without the makeup, calling himself Dustin Rhodes. He begged Kurt Angle for a rematch with Bray Wyatt. Bray Wyatt the week before had beaten him and wiped the makeup off his face. So Kurt granted his wish, and Bray Wyatt is now in the record books as having beaten both Goldust and Dustin Rhodes because he got another win here. Remember how excited people were when Goldust turned heel and he started doing those classic Goldust movie vignettes on TV again? Well, WWE doesn't. They aired a split-screen interview with Brock Lesnar and Braun Strowman that was taped the week before, although Michael Cole was live at the announce desk. I'm always fascinated by how they're able to time this so perfectly. But there Michael Cole was, I guess, getting whatever time cues and narrating a week-old interview between Brock and Braun. And, you know, Braun, basically, the gist of it was, you know, not only did I stand up to Suplex City, I'm gonna stomp it to the ground. And Brock cut Heyman off when Heyman was talking and very calmly thanked Strowman for backing him into a corner and for challenging him. He says, that's when I'm at my best. I'll see you Sunday. And he went to leave, and I'm thinking to myself, wow, what a kind gentleman this Brock Lesnar has become. He has mellowed here in his older age. And then he had second thoughts, and he sat back down, and he said, Suplex City, bitch. So, I take it all back. I thought Braun was fine. I mean, if anything, he was a little too rehearsed. You know, when they have these big monsters out there, some of the dialogue they give them, again, it's not anything you would ever expect them to say. They used to do that with Kane all the time, and it would annoy the hell out of me. Kane, you think back to that 2010 run after the Kane put his brother in the vegetative state and all that, and he won the world title, and they would have these like 10-minute long Kane soliloquies in the middle of the ring with the creepy music in the background that made it even cheesier. And he's throwing out these words. I mean, we know Kane is a well-educated guy, but I mean, come on. So I don't like it when they do that, but he made his point. This was not the Austin Rock sit-down with JR before WrestleMania 17 or anything like that, but I think it got people interested enough. We were already sold. I think most people were sold on this match before this interview. You know, they just want to see two big guys beat the hell out of each other. And Braun has been positioned, I think, more than anybody except Goldberg as the biggest single threat to Brock Lesnar's championship run since WrestleMania. He's been the only one. Before that, you'd have to, you know, go back to Goldberg, and there really haven't been too many other people. Strowman did come out later on in the show. He obliterated Enzo Amore to chants of thank you, Strowman. A fine way to build up your challenger tonight for the Cruiserweight title. John Cena was not in San Jose, but the big dog was. Roman Reigns came out, said that sometimes John Cena tends to say stupid shit. This coming from the guy who talked about great ticket sales the week before in front of a half-empty arena. He said that he doesn't believe Cena when Cena says that Roman is trying to be the next John Cena because he's not some jacked-up white dude with a big head and a military crew cut. If he did, he said, I wouldn't have a career here. You don't believe me? Ask Alex Riley about that. Well, you can imagine the tweets I got from people when they mentioned that name. That brought back some memories for me. For the record, I don't think I ever really even talked about this, but... after all that back and forth with myself and Alex Riley and all that nonsense that went on last year, right after he got released from WWE, I actually got a very nice DM from him. thanking me for the segment that I did on the show where I talked about the John Cena, Alex Riley stuff and the background, the alleged background between them and how Cena buried him. I know that segment is up on TV Tracks. I actually put the link up during the show Monday night. As soon as they mentioned Alex Riley's name, I found the clip and I tweeted a link out to it. Just for the people who may have absolutely no idea what Roman was talking about here. But in any event, he called Cena a hypocrite. He showed their footage from 5 years ago when John Cena was cutting promos on The Rock before their WrestleMania match in Miami. When Cena was calling out Dwayne for running off to Hollywood, he said, "No Mercy is going to be the same as WrestleMania," Roman said. "Only this time, you're going to lose to a different Samoan." Or I like the way that the Samoans actually don't say it that way. They say Samoan, right? I've heard Roman say it that way. I've heard Joe say it that way. He's going to lose to a different Samoan. There you go. He said, "I'll see you Sunday, movie star," just like John Cena said to The Rock 5 years ago. I thought this was Roman's best showing yet. I thought in one of these things, because last week? Last week was like the worst of the bunch. Because not only was it just not that, you know, it's kind of like a copy of a copy of a copy, right? It's never as good as the original. That first promo all those weeks ago was kind of riveting in its own way. Cringy at moments, but riveting. And then they just sort of get progressively worse after that. But without Cena there, and Roman just sort of out there doing his thing, you know, whatever, he seemed a little more relaxed. He's no John Cena. He'll never be. He just doesn't have that natural, you know, on promos at least, he just doesn't have that natural quality about him. But I thought this was his best showing yet. He was able to use Cena's own words against him. I thought it was kind of clever the way they dug up that footage. Even Cena, like in interviews, has admitted, like he's apologized to The Rock because he's like, "Yeah, all those things I said all those years ago was kind of stupid." He would look like an awfully big hypocrite if he was still sticking behind what he said all those years ago. Now, given the fact that he's spending a lot of his time doing movie stuff and TV stuff. So the good thing about Roman this week, he did not come off like a total hypocrite the way he did the week before. And so that was the key stuff from Raw. Let's get into No Mercy here. There is a pay-per-view tonight. This is probably, not even probably, I think this is the biggest Raw brand show they have ever done. The last time I had this much interest going into a Raw brand pay-per-view was in July. It was Great Balls of Fire, which had the Brock Lesnar Samoa Joe main event. I don't even remember anything else from that show. Maybe, I guess Strowman and Roman, was that on the show? Other than that, I don't remember anything else. It was all about Lesnar and Joe. It was a fresh match. I was kind of hoping Joe would pull it out, but he didn't. But here we have two main events on this show that legitimately are WrestleMania worthy. If you put either of these matches on the WrestleMania card next year, I don't think you would have anybody looking at it going, "That's a WrestleMania main event." Of course not. Either one of these matches could headline WrestleMania next year. And we have them both here on this show tonight. So it's kind of a similar thing where I don't really have a whole lot of excitement or interest for any of the other matches on the show. Maybe it turns into a sleeper show, best show of the year, who knows. But it's all about the two main events. Kickoff match, Apollo Crews against The Drifter. Why? No idea. But that's what the match, hopefully he's just there for a win for The Drifter. He seems to be building some momentum and getting over somewhat here, so... Apollo Crews is just sort of stuck in the muck. I look at him and, you know, people, like, I've gotten some mailbag questions asking me, you know, like, what's missing from Apollo Crews? Is it all just the company's fault? Like, why isn't he a bigger star? And, yeah, I mean, you can say it's in the bookie. He's not booked to be anything special. But one of the things that's missing from him is really a personality. That's why they put him with Titus, I would imagine. And I actually understand it, and I think they're on the right track in doing that. And he does show a little bit more in the way of personality now than he did, let's say, 6 months ago. But he still, there's something missing when it comes to his charisma, his personality. It's almost like he's this charisma vacuum, as talented as he is, right? I mean, a guy that looks like him being able to do standing moonsaults and all that kind of stuff is very impressive, but... there really isn't a whole lot more to him that we've seen than that. And, you know, when his music hits, I mean, there's people in the crowd who groan and, you know, I don't know what you do in a situation like that. They put him with Titus and, you know, I guess things are a little bit better for him now than they were all those months ago, but he's just, there's something missing there. Can't put my finger on. I don't know if maybe he has to just get serious and start, you know, a vicious turn on Titus O'Neil and leave him bloodied or something like that. And I don't know, but the Drifter is the one who seems to be kind of getting over now. So he should go. I think he'll win this match here. We have Finn Balor. By the way, I just spent way too much time talking about Apollo Crews and the Drifter. Finn Balor takes on Bray Wyatt. There will be no demon. This is man against man, mano y mano tonight. This feud needs to end, and it needs to end tonight. And the only way for it to end is with a Finn Balor win. So I am picking Balor. I think he wins. He is a legitimate contender for the Universal title. There's a lot of hate. I see it on YouTube all the time. A lot of people do not see what the big deal is in Finn Balor. And I respect their opinion, but I think Balor in the Universal title picture would at least, you know, he'd be a fresh face. There's a story there where he never did get his rematch. That story is just sort of lingering and hanging there. At some point, maybe not now, but at some point they're going to have to go back to that. And maybe it will be in the next month or two, because if he vanquishes Bray Wyatt tonight and they both move on to something else, then what does Balor move on to if not the championship, right? So if he doesn't get the next shot, I think it'll be coming up very soon. You know, I talked about Balor a few weeks ago, and I said that in my opinion, which somehow ended up as a news item on some websites, but it was just my opinion, that the reason we have not seen Finn Balor challenge yet for the Universal Championship is because they do not want to beat him. They do not want to have him go in there and have Brock Lesnar just beat him the way that Brock beats everybody else. You know, they know that in Balor they have, you know, something special, and the demon and the entrance, and they haven't invested everything that they've invested in this guy just for him to be some mid-card guy fighting for the Intercontinental title. And so why feed him to Lesnar? Let's just wait until either Lesnar no longer is the champion. I don't know that they would have him beat Brock. I mean, I think people's heads would explode if they had Finn Balor be the one to take the title off Lesnar. And I don't think I would do that either. But there's no doubt in my mind that Balor has to win this match. This feud needs to end. We have Neville defending the Cruiserweight title against Enzo Jabore here. If Enzo Amore, let me just say this, if Enzo Amore, a guy who has been laid out and made to look like a fool every single week for months now, if he gets some kind of slip on a banana peel type win, like, I do not expect any sort of dominant win from Enzo Amore. If he actually wins this match, it's going to be on some sort of a distraction or a slip on a banana peel type of deal. If he gets that kind of win, any kind of win, over Neville, who is far better than the division that they have stuck this guy in, that will be the nail in the coffin of this Cruiserweight division. Anyone but Enzo. Moving him to 205 Live, maybe it brought in some new viewers. Maybe not, actually, because I see the rankings on the network, and 205 Live kind of went up a little bit when Enzo first came in, and now they're right back down. I don't really see all this renewed interest in 205 Live just because Enzo Amore is on the show. But he cannot win that championship. He just can't. And if he does, then Neville has to leave the Cruiserweight division. It's kind of like NXT. Guys from NXT ultimately get called up to Raw or SmackDown. The champion, when he loses the title many times, just happened with Bobby Roode. What happened? He had one more match. He lost. He did the job to Rodney Mack. No, Bobby Roode did not lose to Rodney Mack. He lost to Roderick Strong because he was going up to the SmackDown roster. He was moving on to bigger and better things, hopefully. Who knows? We haven't seen Bobby Roode on TV for 3 weeks. And apparently what they're saving him for, of all things, is Dolph Ziggler. So I'm not very encouraged so far. But that's the idea, is that you leave NXT, you move on to bigger and better things, you make more money, yada, yada, yada. If Neville is going to lose the championship here, the only reason I'm willing to accept for a championship loss here is if they're going to move him out of that Cruiserweight division. because Neville belongs in the ring with guys like Finn Balor. He belongs in the ring with guys like Seth Rollins. And frankly, if Finn Balor is going to be mixing it up with guys like Lesnar and Joe and Roman and people like that and challenging for the Universal title, there is not a single good reason that anybody can give me that Neville should not be right there alongside him challenging for the championship and fighting those same guys. I don't care how, oh, he's small. Like, shut up with that nonsense. Neville is too good to be wasted for too long in the cruiserweight division. He's got a plum spot for a long time now. He's been the champ, except for that little hiccup where he dropped it to Tozawa. He's been the champion now for a very long time. He has carried that division on his back now for really the last year. The heel turn, when he turned heel, that was just night and day. It was a career changer for him, and he's been tremendous. But guess what? It's time for him to move on. That's the only way I would accept an Enzo Amore title win, and then Enzo should immediately drop it to somebody else, like Cedric Alexander or somebody like that. Otherwise, there's just no way that Enzo Amore in any universe should be beating Neville to become the Cruiserweight champion. And I think Neville is going to retain. He's my pick. But that is the only way I am willing to accept an Enzo Amore win, is if that means Neville moves on. The Miz defends the Intercontinental Championship against Jason Jordan. You know, I've been waffling on this because part of me thinks that it's too early. It's only the first match. You know, Jordan's going to win the title, I have no doubt. Maybe it'll be at the next pay-per-view. But, you know, I don't know. Part of me thinks that they're just going to do the title change now and put the championship on him. And maybe that's a mistake. Maybe it's sort of like when Rock first won the IC title in 97 and started getting the Die Rocky Die chance. Maybe it is, but I don't know. I just feel like they're going to do that title change tonight. I could be wrong, but I'm going to go with Jordan here in this match. We have Alexa Bliss defending her Raw Women's Championship against Nia Jax, Sasha Banks, Bayley, and Emma in a, I guess it would be a fatal five-way now. I think Alexa Bliss is retaining. I think Alexa is going to retain. And I think, you know, Asuka's coming in soon. I think Asuka may well take the title from Alexa. You know, I kind of waffled on this a little bit too when I was thinking about it earlier in the week. I was going to go with Nia, but I thought Nia looked a little too dominant here on this show on Monday. She was actually getting cheered in San Jose, but that, you know, like the West Coast and like the Bay Area, I think, and all that, that's like Samoan territory there. Like a lot of them are from there or they're based there. So I'm not really shocked that she would get a reaction like that over there in San Jose. I think Alexa's going to hold on to it, though. And she just won it back from Sasha. I mean, how much hot potato do you really want to play with this title here? So I say keep it on Alexa. Seth Rollins and Dean Ambrose defend their Raw Tag Team titles against Sheamus and Cesaro, the Beach Ball Killer. I guess the Bar, I should start calling them now. I think Rollins and Ambrose retain. I don't know where they're going with this. I don't know, you know, if they're going to end up breaking up. You know, there's going to be a disagreement and they're going to cost themselves the championship at some point. How this ends, I don't know. I certainly wouldn't break them up yet. I mean, I'm all in, even just for a temporary full Shield reunion that involves Roman. So I wouldn't exactly split them up just yet. I think they retain. And then we have the two main events. Really what this entire show is being sold on here. John Cena, one-on-one against Roman Reigns. Who wins in this match? At no point in the build-up to this match did I ever think that John Cena would win, or did I ever think John Cena should win. That was never even a possibility or a consideration. You're doing this match, Cena has just been lighting this guy up on the microphone. And some of the digs have been pretty, like, they hit a little too close to home. And Roman is the younger guy, Roman is the heir apparent, whether people like it or not, he is. And it just doesn't make any sense for John Cena to just beat him here, unless it's part of a series of matches or something, and there's going to be a rematch at the Rumble or something like that. But, you know, even still, I don't think Cena should be winning this match. I don't think either one of these guys is going to win. I think this match ends in a no contest when Samoa Joe interferes. And I think he probably goes after both guys. You know, Joe should be back in the next few weeks. And the question is, what does Joe do? And I was thinking about it, and I was saying, well, the two people on the Raw roster right now, I know he's a free agent, but you know, the two people that I think would make the most sense to be slotted with Joe are either Roman Reigns or John Cena. We still have not seen that one-on-one match. I guess they did at the house shows. It's kind of like when Flair first came to WWF. It's like, oh, I can't wait to see the first big Hulk Hogan-Ric Flair match, and they're going to wrestle at WrestleMania, and then they never did. It's like, well, we never got the match. Well, that's not exactly true. Most cities got the match. They did the match on the house shows for months before they even got to WrestleMania, and then we never even got the match. So they have wrestled on house shows, but I've never seen a John Cena Samoa Joe match before, and I'd like to. Now, Cena's going away, I believe, for a while after this, so I guess it would probably be Joe and Roman, and then eventually Cena comes back and they can do Cena and Joe, but that's sort of what I see happening here. Because you're not going to do Strowman and Roman again coming out of this show. It's too soon. Reigns and Joe, I think, makes sense. Joe comes back, he wipes them both out, probably pisses a lot of people off that we didn't get a finish. Actually, you know what? I could see people cheering Joe. I was going to say, like, people would be very upset that Joe cost them a clean, like, a decisive winner in this match, but I actually think enough people hate both these guys that if Joe came out and killed them both, he'd get cheered for it. He'd be the biggest babyface on the show. So, that's my prediction. By the way, John Cena was on the Edge and Christian podcast this week. He made a very interesting... Well, he made a few interesting comments. Somebody asked me about the... you know, what he said about the roster, and I'll get to that when I get to the mailbag, but he said he's not retiring, and he'll always be there to do whatever Vince McMahon needs him to do, but... And this is the caveat, but... He said these asks from Vince need to be more selective going forward for his own health and well-being. And I think for John Cena, the consummate company guy who's always there to do whatever is asked of him, for him to say that, that says a lot. He's got to be feeling pretty beat up at this point. And we've heard the stories of how Vince McMahon, you know, treats some of his guys, top guys, runs them ragged and all that. I think Bret Hart had the great analogy. Granted, he was on bad terms. He had just been screwed in Montreal, but if you remember Wrestling with Shadows, that great quote where they sort of run you into the ground, and when they get out of you what they want to get out of you, they take you out back behind the barn and put a slug in your head, right? So, for Cena to say that, that was very interesting, I thought. We have Brock Lesnar in the main event defending his Universal Championship against Braun Strowman. I think this will be a dogfight. I don't think it's going to be a squash one way or the other. I think the time is right to put the title on Braun Strowman, but I don't think Vince McMahon will do it. And the finish of this match, as I sit here recording this, which is the day of the show, is said to still be up in the air. Or at the very least, it's being kept very close to the vest and nobody knows what it is. But the belief is that they haven't even settled yet on a finish. And we're only a few hours away from the show. So you can go either way with this. I may be making a prediction on a match that hasn't even been decided yet, but I personally would go with Braun. I do think Brock Lesnar retains. I think he retains by pinfall with the F5. I'm going with a no contest in the Cena Reigns match, and so I can't see them doing back-to-back main events without a finish, so I do think we'll have a decisive finish here. But I think Lesnar takes it. I really think, though, you know, Reigns and Lesnar for WrestleMania, that's been the rumor all year long, and I really think they're sticking to their guns. I don't think it's going to be a Daniel Bryan WrestleMania 30 situation where they kind of, let's listen to the fans. They like this guy and not this guy, and they change the whole card around. I don't think that's going to happen this time. I think Vince, in his mind, has his main event that he wants, and he's been working for years and years to get this guy over, and I think he's going to stay the course. And so I think Brock retains, but... Strowman is in a position, I think, where if they put the championship on him, I mean, look, I'm sure there's people who don't like him or think he's boring, but by and large, people seem to dig Braun Strowman. At the very least, I think, I don't know of anybody who wouldn't buy into him in that position as being a world champion, somebody who would be a believable world champion, you know, in that monster role, larger than life. Braun fits the bill. Right? I mean, he's a 300 and almost 400 pound guy. At least that's how they bill him. They bill him at like 385. He's a monster of a man who flies around sometimes like he's a lightweight. He's picked this up a lot quicker than most people do. I mean, I think of guys who started out in wrestling, you know, when you first see them, they're very inexperienced and they're very young. but who pick it up very naturally and very quickly, the best I could think of is Kurt Angle. I think of two guys, really. Kurt Angle and then Brock Lesnar, in that order. Braun Strowman is up there. He's up there in terms of guys that have picked this up very... I mean, I'm not saying he can wrestle like Kurt Angle can wrestle, but he has picked this up quicker than most people, and I can't think of any other big guys that look like him. And we've seen plenty of big guys like Strowman who are very clunky and just frankly aren't very good. And he's proven me wrong. The moment I laid eyes on this guy and they put him in the Wyatt family, he just looked like some big lug they shoved in there to be a background player. And here he is in main events wrestling for the championship. So I would do the change. I don't think they will. I think Lesnar retains. And so there you go. Those are your No Mercy predictions. There will be a No Mercy review as normal up on the YouTube channel, Sound Off Extra. After the pay-per-view ends, it'll probably be early Monday morning is when it'll hit YouTube. And you can always download from the description. There's always a link. Go to the YouTube video in the description down below. There is always a link for you to download the MP3 for you to stream it or, you know, download it to your device. But that'll be up on YouTube later tonight. Okay, so there is a ton of news items to get to here. And then I'll swing back to Tuesday's SmackDown. Eventually, I'll get to SmackDown. There's a lot of other stuff to get to first. WWE put out a very interesting survey this week relating to programming that they are considering as part of a premium-priced tier on the WWE Network. Now, they did a similar survey to this one last year, and nothing really came from it. But the fact that they're asking about this again tells me that they are serious about going to a premium model for those who want to pay a little extra for some extra content. So I thought I would go through some of the options under consideration here and just give my thoughts. I'm not entirely sure where they're getting the money for any of this, like for example, the reality shows that they talk about, because those are very expensive to produce. That's one of the reasons why we never got a Legends House Season 2 after Season 1 ended. Although they were also shopping Season 1 around to actual networks and nobody wanted it, which is how it ended up on the network. But if they're still in cost-cutting mode, and by all accounts they are, I'm not really sure how they're going to come up with the money for all this stuff. Maybe this is a sign that they're going to start to ease up on all of the cost-cutting. But in any event, original scripted dramas, which would be wrestling-themed and similar in nature to a show like Game of Thrones, which I've never seen an episode of. Don't yell at me. Dramas are expensive, like I was just talking about. I would rather they put that money towards some of the other ideas that are listed here that I'm going to get into. But if they are going to do it, if they are going to start to produce original scripted dramas, I sure hope they don't use their own writers for it. Original scripted comedies. Things like WWE Roasts, Southpaw Regional Wrestling, which they just announced that they are adding to the network. Although it's the episodes that have already been posted to YouTube. It's not like another brand new season yet. But for those of you who don't know, they may already be up there. They are adding those Southpaw episodes to the network for you to watch them there. Anyway, it continues on. WWE's version of The Office is another idea that they had here under the comedy category. You know, the term The Office in wrestling has a very different meaning. If it was a comedy following, like, Vince McMahon at the gorilla position during the shows when he's yelling and screaming at people, I'm sure that would be a riot. That would be very entertaining to watch. I'd be down for that. Really, I would be down for all of this stuff, so check me off. I would be extremely interested in this category. I like the idea of roasts, especially if they really just sort of let them actually roast people. That would be fun. Now, this one is interesting. One of the options here is an audio-only channel for the network, which would play, which would offer play-by-play for all the pay-per-views, music playlists, sports radio-style call-in shows, and yes, podcasts. Now, considering that most people probably listen to podcasts away from home, on the go, I'm not really sure what the point of that would be, having them on the network, unless there was like a visual component to it, like the old Stone Cold podcast that I don't think they've done any of since that disaster with Austin and Dean Ambrose. But, you know, unless you have like an unlimited data plan on your phone and you can listen to podcasts through their app on the go, I'm really not sure how much interest there would be in something like this. So I am not the biggest fan of that. I'm undecided on that. Local tournaments, tournaments that take place in your home country featuring local talent similar to the WWE United Kingdom tournament that they did this year. I thought the UK tournament was awesome, and it exposed me to people like Pete Dunne and Tyler Bate and Wolfgang, so I would absolutely be in favor of that. Other tournaments, such as WWE versus NXT, a lucha-style tournament, a tag team tournament, King of the Ring, or Queen of the Ring tournament. I love tournaments, so I love the idea. Queen of the Ring, I'm not really sure of. We just had the Mae Young Classic. Tag team tournament, isn't that what the Dusty Rhodes Classic is? Or is that just an NXT? I guess that's just an NXT thing. But I love tournaments. You know, WWE against NXT is a very interesting one. King of the Ring. King of the Ring should absolutely be brought back, either as a pay-per-view or a network special. Well, I guess they're all network specials now, but I think it makes more sense as a proper pay-per-view, not as like an extra show. So if let's say you have two pay-per-views in a given month, let's add another show. Let's add a third one. I don't think we need a third one. I think one of the pay-per-views should just be the King of the Ring. I think you have a show like a Hell in a Cell, which is completely pointless, and all it does is bastardize that stipulation. They've beaten that thing. Oh, it's October. It's time for Hell in a Cell. I've never liked that. When there's a reason to do Hell in a Cell, you do Hell in a Cell. So why do we even need a show like that, right? A gimmick like King of the Ring, I think, would be far more exciting if it was a split-brand show and something was on the line. Now, right now, they have four split-brand shows. They have Royal Rumble, WrestleMania, SummerSlam, and Survivor Series. They have at least, I don't even know what the number is, right? It's at least 12 pay-per-views a year. The number's probably like 14, 15, 16 total pay-per-views per year that they have. I see no reason why you can't have half a dozen split-brand shows per year. Royal Rumble, WrestleMania, King of the Ring, Money in the Bank, SummerSlam, and Survivor Series. Why can't you have six split-brand shows instead of just the four? You already have so many pay-per-views as it is. I think those shows are a lot more exciting. That's just the fact. When you have access to both brands, it makes the shows that much more exciting. King of the Ring, I think you'd have like a 16-man bracket. Eight people qualify from Raw. Eight people qualify from SmackDown. And the winner gets a shot at their respective brand's world title. Or Universal title. Or Galaxy title. Or whatever the fuck. At the next pay-per-view. So all of a sudden, King of the Ring means something. And it's not just a gimmick to use because, hey, Monday Night Raw, we need a gimmick this week. All right, we'll do King of the Ring. Like, make it mean something. You know, they're suddenly resurrecting old WCW pay-per-view names and concepts. For years, I've been arguing for them to bring back War Games as a gimmick to breathe some new life back into Survivor Series. Don't bring back Fall Brawl. Incorporate War Games as the big main event at Survivor Series. Five men from Raw, five men from SmackDown. Two rings if you can fit them, but at worst, use the Elimination Chamber if you have to, because that doesn't need its own pay-per-view either. These are all, I think, viable ideas. These are all doable ideas that I think they should consider that I think would work. And I'd like to see them do that. We have WWE Director's Cut is another option here from the list. This would include shows like Legends narrating historic pay-per-views or current superstars offering their perspective and analysis on matches and events. I'd be down for that. I mean, I do that. I offer my opinion and my analysis, and I'm not a wrestler, right? There are lots of podcasters who do that, so I think it would be nice to hear from the talent themselves, maybe narrating a match or a pay-per-view that they remember, like, this is the match, or this is the show that got me to become a wrestling fan in the first place, or maybe it was an important match in their own career that they were involved in, and we get their, you know, like, legitimate, honest feedback and opinions on what was going on at the time, or the creative process, or frustrations they were having. I mean, there's a lot of ways you can go with that, but I'd be down for that. We have special live events from around the world from unique locations. I don't know what they mean by that. Maybe the Bermuda Triangle. I think that would be kind of interesting, but they say from unique locations featuring an unexpected main event. I like it. I'd be willing to pay extra for it if that were part of a more, you know, like an expanded package. So maybe lumping this together with some of these other ideas. On its own, I wouldn't pay extra for it. But if let's say they were going to do special live events from unique locations, and I, you know, take two or three other ideas here from this list, that's something I'd be willing to pay a little bit more for. Now, here's an idea that I had pitched years ago. This was right around the time the network first launched. I talked about this. House shows. Here's what it says. For the first time ever, get a live ringside view of select WWE house shows. I don't know why this hasn't already happened, especially for events when they're in a big city like New York. If let's say they're at the Garden, or they're in Chicago, or they're overseas in the UK or something, they should absolutely stream some of those events on occasion. Go live on location to wherever it is, and just to give people kind of a flavor for what goes on at those live shows, let's say if they've never been. I'm not saying you have to do it for all of the, I would not do it for all of the house shows. I wouldn't even make it like a weekly or necessarily a monthly thing, but I think it's ridiculous that they haven't already done that. And the fact that they're considering it, you know, better late than never. I think that would just be a cool gimmick for the network. A TV 14 in-ring show. Says a new weekly version of ECW, Extreme Championship Wrestling, or some other edgy new promotion rated TV 14. Now, a lot of you are going to be going nuts and just, you know, losing your minds over this, right? People love TV 14. They want to go back to the Attitude Era. They want things to go back to the way they were, even though they'll never go back to the way they were because they just can't. Logistically, I'm not even sure how they would do this or what talent they would use for it. They need to flesh this idea out more. I'm not like adamantly opposed to it, but they have to flesh this out a little bit more and explain exactly how this would work. This seems to be the least likely, I would say, of the options I've mentioned so far. First of all, can we lay ECW to rest once and for all? Okay, ECW in its original incarnation is never coming back. They did bring it back over 10 years ago, and that version of ECW died a death. So if they did do this, I would hope they don't use the ECW name, okay? Because much like WCW, it's dead, and it should stay dead. Enough. Enough with the ECW already. Now, I'm fine with being more edgy. But if the idea, let's say, is to use people from Raw and SmackDown and have a show that is entirely dedicated to just being edgy, it doesn't work. It's a stupid idea. You're not bringing back, you know, chair shots to the head. You're not going to have them out there doing hardcore matches and bleeding. What are you left with? When you say TV 14, what do you mean by that? Because a lot of people are going to think about that. They're going to think about chair shots to the head, and they're going to think about hardcore matches and weapons and blood and half-naked women parading around. WWE's not going to do that. It goes against everything that whole company is about. Just because it's on the network and it's separate and apart from Raw and SmackDown doesn't mean that people aren't still going to hold their feet to the fire. And the minute that they start doing stuff that crosses a line, it'll be a social media catastrophe for them. And that's all they care about. So it's not as though, you know, things are just, you know, we're going to have this one show where it's just like it used to be 20 years ago. Because if that were the case, then why would anybody watch some of this god-awful stuff they have on TV right now? They would just go to the network and watch that show. But that's part of the problem here. It's like, if you take away all that stuff I just mentioned, which I don't think they would do, what are you left with? Worked shoots with some curse words? We already get that on TV now. They've been on a whole kick for the last 3 weeks of nothing but that. Insider terms, Roman Reigns out there saying shit and bitch, ooh. The Miz out there, you know, talking about Enzo getting kicked off the bus. Like, they're already incorporating that into the main TV shows. I think incorporating some of this TV 14 type stuff into the PG show, since they already do it, I think that's fine. Just do that. You don't need a separate show. Just, it's TV 14. There's enough content already. How many hours of wrestling are we supposed to watch in a given week? But just the idea of it doesn't really make sense to me. Just make your regular shows better. Whether that means being edgy, whether that means writing more compelling TV and coming up with storylines that actually make sense and that people can follow and that people are into, I'd rather they work on making their product better than trying to come up with some offshoot that's never going to work to stick on the network. Like all the stuff that we can't do on TV, we'll just sort of do it on this show. We'll keep doing what we're doing, but we'll give people, we'll throw them a bone and we'll have another show where we get edgy. Doesn't work. They have a show already on the network that's for mature audiences. It's called Camp WWE. If they did roasts, which was one of their ideas here, I would hope that's also for mature audiences. Otherwise, it's not a roast. So, you can have shows on the network for mature audiences. I have no problem with that. I'd like to see more of that. But having a whole other brand or a whole other promotion that exists for the sole purpose of being edgy doesn't work. You know, there's been rumors for the longest time now of them adding Progress and ICW, right, from overseas, to the network. ICW, from what I understand, has a pretty edgy TV show. It is definitely not a TV PG program. And the talk has been that that show would end up on the network. Well, if they partner with them, if it ever actually does happen, just air those shows on the network. That could be your separate promotion, okay, that you're airing on the network. That could be, you know, unedited, slap a TV-14 or a TVMA rating on it, and that's fine. I don't think you need to create new content on top of hours and hours of existing content that they already produce just for the purpose of being able to say shit and bitch more often on TV. Just make your product better. Improve the current product. You got 3 hours of TV on Monday nights. You have 2 hours of TV on Tuesday nights. Not even counting the hour of NXT. Work to make those shows better. Make that must-see TV. Why am I sitting through that? Right? Just because it's TV PG doesn't mean it. I think people lose sight of this fact. Think back to 1997. 1997 was a turning point year for WWE. There was a lot of really good stuff when you look back that happened in 97. That was really the beginning. I even argue late 96 into early 97 was the true birth of the Attitude Era. You had that core group of four or five guys feuding over the WWF title who were constantly, consistently pissed off about something or other. Bret Hart was bitching about getting screwed long before he got screwed in Montreal. Steve Austin was out there. We know, you know, Stone Cold being Stone Cold. You had Undertaker. You had Vader. You had Sid. Really, I think of Bret, Shawn, Taker, and Sid and Austin. That's really the kind of the core group I think of the pissed off crew they had back in early 97. And that was compelling TV. And part of it also was you kind of sensed that some of those guys really didn't like each other. But they were out there. They were putting television on that was pretty edgy. Okay, back then in 97, and they were using coarse language and stuff. And people lose sight of the fact that I think for the most part, all throughout 97, that show had a TV PG rating. So when people say, oh, it's PG, I don't really think they fully understand what that means. Just because it's PG doesn't mean that you can't do stuff like that and you can't have an edgy show. It's sort of an easy cop-out, like, well, WWE has to be PG, therefore the TV is what it is because it has to be. No, it doesn't. It's an excuse. It's a crutch. It doesn't have to be that way. It wasn't that way in 97. Who says it has to be that way now? The little letters in the box in the corner of the screen don't mean shit. Got me all fired up now. New reality shows, showing life on the road for the WWE superstars, an insider view of their workouts and training regimens. I would love to see Jinder Mahal's workout and training regimens. Superstar Cribs, a WWE-style apprentice show to win a job with WWE. And Legends House, Season 2, Attitude Era Edition. The only thing that really interests me from that list, honestly, is Legends House. I enjoyed the first season of Legends House. And I think an Attitude Era version of it could be a lot of fun. And hey, there's your TV 14 show right there. You can't do an Attitude Era Legends House unless you give it a mature rating. And finally, they list a bunch of different promotions that they might be able to offer in the future, discounts and stuff like that. Also, the possibility of offering new and classic content on the network from Ring of Honor, TNA/Impact/Global Force Wrestling. Which is the funniest fucking thing I saw all week. That's literally how they listed it. They do not know what to call them, so they just listed all three names. It's just ridiculous. And I'm going to talk about them in a little bit too, don't you worry. New Japan Pro Wrestling made the list, as well as ICW, Progress, or other regional indie promotions. Ed Nordholm, of Anthem and Owl fame, okay, has said, why would we sell our tape library? Why would we sell the TNA tape library to WWE to use on their network when we can start our own network and we can monetize the content ourselves, which is what they've started doing. They have their own digital network now. So that seems like a long shot. I don't think that's going to happen. Not anytime soon. Okay. New Japan has New Japan World. And their owner is on record as saying that any offer to air New Japan content on the WWE network is an insult because it means that WWE doesn't see them as legitimate competition. That WWE does not take them seriously. He was offended by even the idea that WWE would be willing to work with them. So I can't see New Japan caving and, you know, allowing their content to be streamed on the network. ICW and Progress have been rumored for a long time now. I think it probably will end up happening at some point. Ring of Honor? You know, Ring of Honor may be a little bit more likely than TNA or New Japan at this point, but still not very likely. I think they're just trying to gauge overall fan interest in each one of those promotions more than anything else. They want to see who's interested in TNA, who's interested in ROH, who's interested in New Japan. They're just trying to get a sense of things. Yeah, I've done surveys. I've done two different surveys in the last few years of you guys, if you remember. And when you do these surveys, you're going to have questions that you throw out there that have no real basis in reality necessarily, but you just sort of, it's almost like a red herring, but you want to just sort of gauge people's interest in certain things, even if you already know the answer, right? I think that's what this is, more than anything else. So this does not mean that TNA and ROH or New Japan are coming to the WWE network. In a perfect world, I would love it because I already pay for the network, so it would be convenient to have everything in one place. But that's also pie in the sky. That's not how this works. Now, they also asked for feedback on lots of other features and perks, the ability to download content on the go, which if they did, I guess the podcast idea that I mentioned would make a lot more sense. Alternative commentary, and they cited Steve Austin and Jerry Lawler as a potential alternate commentary team. I would like that. I would also, here's an idea that they didn't list, but I will keep pitching it until I turn blue in the face. I would like for the ability to mute commentary. And I'm being serious about that. If they could do all of these other things, all of these innovations, there's no reason why we can't have the ability to mute the announcers. Maybe it's a separate feed that we have an option, like a non-commentary feed. You know, I've been watching this WWE Unreleased Matches DVD, which I'm still not through it yet. But every match, there's no commentary on any of these matches. These are unreleased, like dark matches, house show matches. Matches that never made the airwaves, that have no commentary whatsoever. It's the natural, ambient, arena noise. And I've been enjoying it. It doesn't take away from the matches at all. Sometimes you just don't want to hear all the nonsense, or the arguing, or Michael Cole, or whatever. And so, I would like to have the opportunity to watch a pay-per-view without commentary. When they add that, I will check off that box. Another thing they have listed here, alternative camera views, virtual reality, the chance to vote on inductees for the WWE Hall of Fame and the Slammy Awards. Now, the Slammy Awards, who gives a shit? I do think giving the fans the chance to choose from a group of names and having like one induction at least for the Hall of Fame each year that's voted on by the fans, I think that would be a pretty cool idea. And then they can just pick the rest of the inductees the way they normally do, which is, i.e., Vince McMahon picks them. So there's lots of good stuff, I think, here to sink your teeth into from all these ideas that they put in this survey. The question is, if they did any or all of these things, what is it worth to you? They asked people at the end of the survey, assume that you had a budget of $10, above and beyond the $10 that you already spend on the network. You have a budget of $10 to spend. How much of that $10 would you allocate towards each of the options that I just ran through? So if you like 10 of the ideas that I mentioned, maybe you want all 10, maybe you allocate a dollar to each one. But that's what they ended the survey with. That tells me that what they're eyeing here for a premium tier model of the network is probably $20 a month or $19.99 or whatever it would be, which I still think it's a steal. I really do. I think $9.99 is a bargain for what you get on the network. If they add even half of the stuff that they have listed here, especially content from other promotions, I think $20 is still a great deal. WWE is resurrecting an old staple, of the NWA in November, only a few days after the Survivor Series, in fact. They are bringing back Starrcade on Saturday, November 25th, back to where it all began at the Greensboro Coliseum. Ironically, I find this ironic, WWE created the Survivor Series in 87, largely out of spite, as a way to kill off Starrcade. They were even running the show the same night. The same night that Starrcade, on Thanksgiving, I think, back in 87, was set to run. And they told, Vince went to all the cable companies, and they told the cable companies, who some of whom were going to do like a package deal if you order both shows, and they said, if you air Starrcade, you will not get WrestleMania 4. And so all but like, I think, two or three cable companies were scared off, and they bailed on Starrcade. And that was sort of the beginning of the end. Then they moved Starrcade out of Greensboro, and that was a mistake, but that's sort of a very quick history of how the Survivor Series came about and the connection there to Starrcade. It was a pretty nasty thing for them to do, but that was Vince McMahon in the 1980s. Actually, that's kind of Vince McMahon still in 2017 because WrestleCade is running a show about 20 minutes away that same night. Also in North Carolina, WrestleCade has been this big indie event in the area for like 5 years now, I think they've been running. It's actually a three-day event. It's like a big convention with wrestling events as well. They have signings and Q&As and all that, and it's based in the Carolinas, so they're really focusing on the old like Mid-Atlantic fans from back in the day. And they bring in a ton of big names. Like, this year is no different. There's a lot of people who actually work for WWE as like road agents and stuff who are supposed to be appearing at WrestleCade. We'll see now if they do. But they've got names on the lineup like Arn Anderson and Dean Malenko and Jerry Lawler and Mick Foley. We'll see if, you know, in the case of someone like Arn Anderson or Dean Malenko, who work as producers for the company, we'll see if they have anything to say about that. But believe me, it is no coincidence that WWE is running the same night, only a few minutes away. The WrestleCade folks, I take it, they thought about moving the event that night. They have decided not to. They are going to keep their schedule as is. So as for Starrcade, it is now back as a house show gimmick, less than a week after Survivor Series. As of right now, it is not scheduled to air on the network. That could change, but it is strictly a live event. You and I will not be able to watch it unless you want to buy a ticket and go to Greensboro. It is not supposed to be airing on the network, which means, as cool as it is to have the Starrcade name back, I really couldn't care less. If I can't watch it, what do I care? What's there to get excited about? They're headlining with a double steel cage match. Jinder Mahal defending the WWE title against Shinsuke Nakamura. Hopefully not. Hopefully by then, it's Nakamura defending the title against Jinder. And Natalya defending her SmackDown Women's Championship in a cage against Charlotte. So they're putting a flair back in a cage in the Carolinas. That's kind of cool. They're also advertising the Hardy Boys, who are from the Carolinas, even though they're on Raw. They'll be making an appearance. I don't know if they're wrestling or not. Probably they are. The Rock and Roll Express is advertised. Ricky the Dragon Steamboat is advertised, which the arena they tweeted the card, like a graphic of the whole lineup for that night. And they actually spelled it Steamboat. They also misspelled Bobby Roode as Booby Roode, which is way funnier, I have to say. Two people who were not happy about Starrcade being brought back are Cody and Brandi Rhodes. Now, Starrcade, as you well know, was the brainchild of Cody's dad, Dusty Rhodes, the American Dream, and Brandi tweeted that Starrcade was created and delivered by Dusty Rhodes. WWE did not want to do it while he was there. Now they want to do it and not give credit? Cody, meanwhile, had this to say. He said, "Dear Michael Hayes, if you're afraid that an event won't sell because of the holiday and you want one of my dad's events, at least book Goldie." That being Goldust. And Michael Hayes responded back to Cody. He said, "So, Cody, you're right. We should have Goldie on the show. By the way, what are you doing that night? Do you want a team with your brother?" So Michael Hayes extending an invitation to the Ring of Honor champion to come to Starrcade to team up with Goldust and wrestle on the card that night. I would put the chances of that somewhere between slim and none. And I'm sure Hayes knows that. Especially now, this week, Ring of Honor made the announcement that Cody Rhodes either has or will be signing an exclusive contract with Ring of Honor. Right? He has not tied himself down Ever since he left WWE, he's floated around. He's done all these different... It's actually been very impressive because I think in the same year, in the same 12-month span of time, Cody Rhodes did, I think, WrestleMania... I think he was on Wrestle Kingdom as well. Battle of Los Angeles for PWG. He did a bunch of other things as well. He's been all over the place. I think he did Final Battle for Ring of Honor. But now apparently he has found a new home. He's going to settle down in ROH. And I doubt very seriously if he even wanted to that Ring of Honor would allow something like that. None of this stopped Goldust from chiming in and suggesting that they do the Rhodes Brothers against the Hardy Boys on that show. Then Matt Hardy went totally nuts and suggested that Cody bring... Not only should Cody come to the show, but that Cody ought to bring the Young Bucks with him. And he'll bring Rebby and King Maxwell and Senor Benjamin. So basically, Matt Hardy wants to recreate total nonstop deletion, but do it at Starrcade. Which I'm totally down for. But they have to do that on the network. Otherwise, I don't care. Of course, none of this is happening, but it's fun to think about. Unfortunately, they've now fantasy booked a show that sounds far more interesting than much of what's on the actual card that they've listed here. Except for Booby Rude. That's the exception. I do find it interesting that this news broke. I'm not saying one has anything to do with the other. Don't misconstrue what I'm saying. I'm just saying I pitched the idea last week to brand the October 31st episode of SmackDown as Halloween Havoc this year. Remember I was talking about that and the straitjacket match between Ziggler and Rude and all of a sudden, a few days later, I think it was Ryan Satin breaks the news that they're going to resurrect all these old WCW ideas and Halloween Havoc is one that is possibly under consideration. Now, they've said nothing about Halloween Havoc. They mentioned Starrcade. They haven't mentioned what else they might bring back. But I'm hoping that means there's a chance it might happen. Problem is, they'd probably just use the usual set for it. Like, if they actually did resurrect Halloween Havoc, let's say they do that. Let's say next month on SmackDown, which is on a Tuesday night, it falls on Halloween night, they actually brand it a Halloween Havoc edition of SmackDown, right? How cool would that be? Well, let's be honest here, right? They probably just have the same set. Would they put any creativity into it at all? Like, I've always been in love with that giant goblin balloon set that they used for Halloween Havoc back in 98. If they could come up with, like, a cheap custom set to use just for that one night and call it Halloween Havoc, I'd be a very happy guy. Like, you don't have to break the bank to make it look good. I mean, you don't even need pyro. All you need is a smoke machine, like a fog machine, right? And some fake tombstones and skeletons. Everybody dresses up in costumes that night, even the announcers. Like, it's not that hard. Really, it doesn't cost you anything. Total Nonstop Global Force Impact announced this week that they are bringing their biggest show of the year, Bound for Glory, up north to Ottawa, Ontario, Canada. It also seems that I may have to cut the Global Force out of Total Nonstop Global Force Impact because they are no longer using the GFW initials. Apparently, they never fully consummated the deal with Jeff Jarrett for the name. And now with him being out of the picture and or suspended or whatever, they didn't say that he was suspended. It's a leave of absence, but let's be honest here. We all know what this is. With him out of the picture, it seems that they have now divested themselves from the GFW name and are now back to just Impact Wrestling. They started using the name. They had new titles created, the whole nine yards, and apparently the deal wasn't even final yet. What a clown show. Seriously. Barnum and Bailey has nothing on these guys. They can't even rebrand themselves without finding a way to fuck it up. Unbelievable. Anyway, November 5th, that is the date, at the Aberdeen Pavilion in Lansdowne Park in Ottawa. The pavilion will host 5 days of Impact taping, so it's not just Bound for Glory. There's going to be a lot of television that's going to be taped there November 6th through November 10th. Some of you who live up that way have told me that that is a very small building. Ed Nordholm did an interview with the Ottawa Citizen newspaper. He was asked, why would they run the pavilion and not a bigger arena? And he said, an arena would be a big place for us to sell. We want a venue with an intimacy with the crowd. The crowd will pack it in rather than be spread out throughout. It's just the right size. The story says that Nordholm is hoping for 500 people, up to 500 people per night when they run there. Now, I think Full Sail, and if anybody from Full Sail is listening, you can correct me on this, but I think Full Sail has a capacity of about 400 or so for those NXT tapings, 450 maybe. It does make for a more intimate setting. He's not wrong. And I'm all for smaller venues and more intimate settings. Look, if they can't sell tickets, which apparently they can't, then the best thing to do is to get however many people you can and just pack them into a small place and try to shoot it in such a way that makes it look bigger than it actually is. But the Observer this week had a few more notes on this building up there, the pavilion. It's normally used for wine shows, and I am not making this up, senior citizen breakfasts. It has no dressing rooms, very few bathrooms. This company has been in business for 15 years, and they're hoping for 500 fans for their biggest show of the year in a building that normally hosts breakfast for senior citizens. That's really sad. Like, even if you're a big TNA, GFW, Impact, whatever the fuck fan, you've got to look at that and go, man, like, it's just one step forward, five steps back with this company. It's got to be frustrating. To be an Impact fan, it has to be frustrating as all hell. It really does. Like, I really feel bad for them. And the talent there deserves a lot better. I never get these people who are upset with me. And believe me, a lot of these guys are very upset with me. They want my head on a stick because they think I'm the most anti-TNA fan there is. And, you know, and I want the company to go out of business, which of course is complete bullshit. It's complete nonsense. And by the way, I challenge those people to find me any recent clip at all of me saying I want these people on the unemployment line or I want the company to shut down. You can't because it doesn't exist. But they have their own little narrative. They live in their own little world. And so they think, you know, you say the slightest thing about this company and they get so defensive. But I kind of feel sorry for them because they're that passionate about the product. And they have a lot of very talented people who work there. And they just never seem to be able to make any progress. I've used the analogy before of the hamster on the wheel. You know, they try and they try and they pedal and they pedal, but they don't really go anywhere. It's kind of like a stationary bike, right? That's what Impact is. And by the way, I hate to keep piling on, but this was in the news. Jim Cornette, who just returned after many, many years away. He had just returned a number of weeks ago as the new authority figure on TV for Impact. He's already gone. The reason he's gone, they're going to Canada for Bound for Glory and for the next set of tapings. And Cornette can't get across the border into Canada. Because there's some incidents or assaults, I guess, on his record from back in the 80s. He fought with fans, and I don't know the whole story. It doesn't really make a lot of sense to me, because I'm pretty sure when he was in WWE, he was able to travel to Canada without any problems. So why all of a sudden, you know, I guess back in 6 or 7 years ago when he was working for Ring of Honor, he tried to get into Canada, and they wouldn't let him in. And so now he just doesn't even bother. He just assumes, well, I can't get in. And so he's gone. No hard feelings, no heat with the company, not like a big falling out or anything like that, but just like that, poof, done. You can't make this stuff up. I've never heard that as a reason before. That is quite the reason for one's run to end with a company, but there you go. There were two other big miscellaneous stories this week I want to run through real quick. I'll try not to spend too much time on this. First, this Flow Slam WWN situation, which is kind of confusing. And the more I read about this, the more it sounds like a match with two heels instead of there being like a clear-cut babyface in this whole scenario. I think everybody's all fucked up here in this situation. But Fightful.com broke the story that Flow Sports, the parent company of the Flow Slam streaming service, sued WWN Incorporated, the parent company of the World Wrestling Network family of promotions, which Gabe Sapolsky, I don't know if he runs it or he's just one of the people who runs it, but that's sort of Gabe's thing. That's what Gabe is associated with. You know, Evolve is part of that family, and, you know, FIP and some of these other promotions. But they're being sued, alleging that last year when they struck a deal with WWN to be the exclusive streaming home for all of their programming, WWN misrepresented their internet buys and their video on demand purchases. They I don't want to say they cooked the books, because who knows, but they provided inaccurate data to Flow Sports and made their content out to be more valuable than it actually was. And so Flow Sports now is asking for more than $1 million in damages. WWN denies the charge. They claim Flow Sports has been unable to successfully integrate WWN into its mismanaged and failing subscription streaming platform. You know, for two companies that supposedly entered into a five-year deal, I believe it was, a five-year agreement last year, that doesn't sound very promising for the future of that relationship, although I guess it wouldn't after the lawsuit was filed. If it's true and it can be proven in court, you have to think that may well end whatever the working relationship is that Gabe has with NXT. And he's been pretty heavily involved there of late. He's been spotted backstage at NXT shows helping out. Just what an incredibly stupid thing to do if they did misrepresent their numbers. But also, it's incredibly stupid of Flow Slam not to do their due diligence and make sure that the information they were being provided is legitimate and accurate, right? I mean, in some ways, they have nobody to blame but themselves. I mean, I barely even hear anything about this Flow Slam service. I'd be curious if anybody listening to this within earshot right now is a subscriber. I would love to hear from you. Like, what's been your experience? What kind of content? Like, is it worth it? Is it not worth it? What's customer support like? Because I don't hear anything about these guys. You would never even know they exist. And if you take away all of the WWN content and the Evolve shows and all that, what do they even have left on the service? Now, I know they have more than just wrestling. So maybe they have MMA or boxing, I don't know. But in terms of wrestling, it seems to me that the WWN stuff is really all they have. Like, serious question, what other major content wrestling-wise do they even carry? Now, to add to all of this drama, there were a series of Evolve events this weekend that were supposed to air on Flow Slam, and at the last minute, Flow Slam pulled those events and said they would, in fact, not be airing them on the service, which sent WWN scrambling, and they aired, I think they got the events up on their own website. And Flow Sports is withholding payment from them for the last few months, which means that, you know, WWN doesn't get paid for all the content. The whole thing is just a mess. Now, despite all of this, Flow Sports apparently wants to still work with WWN. Now, why you would want to work with somebody who misrepresented themselves and basically screwed you over, I have no idea. They claim they did not want to file the lawsuit. They felt compelled to do so. Meanwhile, WWN allegedly, according to PW Insider, is going to countersue this week. We'll see what that countersuit is all about. But what a mess. You know, the losers here are the fans. You know, the fans, as they always are in these things, they get screwed over. If you're a Flow Slam subscriber, and maybe you're not, because I don't know anybody who is, you basically got screwed this weekend when they pulled those Evolve shows. So the fans get caught in the crossfire here and all of this nonsense. Again, I'm not really sure how, when you enter into a five-year deal with somebody, you don't ask for all of the necessary documentation when it comes to their numbers before you sign off on a contract. I mean, that just makes Flow Sports out to be like some Mickey Mouse operation, that they would sign something without having that information first. So we'll see where this goes. We'll see if WWN is found to be in the wrong on this, what effect, if any, this may have on the working relationship between Evolve and WWE. The other story was What Culture. What Culture was in the news this week. There was a mass exodus of five of their most well-known personalities, including Adam Blampier, Adam Pacitti, Ross Twidell, Sam Driver, and Jack King. They're all gone. According to this statement that What Culture put out early in the week, to pursue other projects. And this also means that they are dissociated from What Culture Pro Wrestling, WCPW, which at least some of them were a part of. The promotion apparently is going to continue on without them. They're going to announce a new general manager, and it's onward and upward. And we'll, I don't know what that means for the future of that What Culture promotion. It doesn't sound too good, because these guys seem like they were the heart and soul of that whole thing, and you ripped out, you rip them out, and I don't know what that means for WCPW, but... You know, man, it's like when the Radicals, right, left WCW together. Only not. Sounds like this has been brewing for a while. What Culture sounds like just a dreadful place to work. People were coming out of the woodwork left and right this week with their just horror stories about what it's like to work there and work for their editor-in-chief, this Matt Holmes guy. If the stories that surfaced this week are to be believed, This guy sounds like a real piece of work as far as how he treats people. And you won't find many glowing reviews of, working conditions over at What Culture. If you go over to the Glassdoor website, either Glassdoor is, you can go and employees and ex-employees of companies will leave feedback about what it's like to work there. What Culture does not sound like a very fun place to work. But at least four of the five who are leaving or who have left look like they're going to start a new company together called Cultaholics. All but this Jack guy are listed as primary officers of the company. This is according to Pro Wrestling Sheet. And it appears that they will continue to make videos and do all of the things that they had been doing for What Culture. Only now they get to call their own shots instead of answering to somebody else. What led to this? Was it just a shitty boss? We don't know. They're not talking. Not yet, anyway. Maybe money played a factor as well. I mean, you look at all the big names they were bringing in for those WCPW shows, like big names that command a lot of money. They brought in Del Rio and Eric Bischoff and other names as well. They didn't come cheap. You knew that there had to be a big budget. There had to be some big money behind that. Then the YouTube adpocalypse stuff hit. I would not at all be surprised if the YouTube stuff happened and all of a sudden the money just wasn't coming in at the rate that it had been. Maybe salaries were cut. Who knows? You know, YouTube is a weird one. YouTube is really, you talk about frustrating. Oh my goodness. And you know, my ad revenue came back up to normal levels for like a month and then it just went right back down again. No rhyme or reason. If anything, I had more views on my videos and yet my revenue went down. So explain that one to me. So all of them leaving together like that, you know, I kind of assumed that they were all going to end up in the same place and start something on their own. I was immediately, when I read this, I was immediately reminded of Dave Scherer, Mike Johnson, Buck Woodward, and I think there was one other person, all leaving OneWrestling.com. This was many, many, like over a decade ago. They just left all together at the same time. And at that time, One Wrestling was run by Joey Styles and Bob Ryder. Bob Ryder of Total Nonstop Global Force Impact fame. Or infamy, I should say. But they all left to go start PWInsider.com. You know, and so, in any event, I know these What Culture guys have a lot of fans. Some of them listen to my show, so I thought it deserved a mention. And hopefully those guys land on their feet. I have a feeling that they'll be... okay. I have a feeling that they'll be just fine. SmackDown Live. Let's get back to some wrestling here. SmackDown was in Oakland, California this past week. Another week, another half-empty house. According to Road Dogg on Twitter, though, it's September. It's a bad time of year. Houses are always down. Nothing to see here. I don't know. Those half-empty SmackDown photos were popping up long before the calendar turned to September, but that's his argument anyway. I'm sure there's some merit to that, but I don't know that I would blame that entirely for some of these awful crowds that we're seeing. I thought this was a bad show. There was a time many months ago where SmackDown was sort of a refuge for those of us who were bored and angry by what we were seeing on Monday nights. And now Raw has very quietly crept up above SmackDown on most weeks. You know, I look at these Twitter polls and just some of the reactions online on my Twitter timeline. And you could see Raw gaining on SmackDown week after week. Now, not every week, you know, but there's been a slight improvement as far as Raw goes since the Superstar Shakeup and Strowman and Joe and people like that were inserted into the main event picture. But SmackDown, ever since the Shakeup, I mean, I think they shook up SmackDown so hard they gave the show brain damage. Now, on this show, there were a couple of bright spots. Kevin Owens, his promo I thought was very good. I thought the women's main event turned into a good match there by the end. A couple of bright spots does not a good show make. And we're going to start with this abomination. That was the Jinder Mahal and Singh Brothers promo. When Jinder came out, Corey Graves said, and I quote, "You may not agree with what he says or how he carries himself, but you can't deny that he is a worthy WWE champion. Oh no? Watch me." For the second straight week, the WWE champion completely bombed. Another failed attempt at comedy, another week of race jokes. He eats dolphin. he rooks funny. Get it? He rooks funny because he can't say the letter L. he looks like Mr. Miyagi. Wax on, wax off. Fuck you. The SmackDown writing team, ladies and gentlemen, Do you realize it took them an entire week to come up with that bit of brilliance? 7 days they had. And that's the best that they could come up with for this WWE Championship feud. And now Asuka is on her way up to the Raw roster. How long before they have Nia Jax or Alexa Bliss out there making sushi jokes? Good luck to her. She's going to need it. Somehow, this segment was actually worse than the one the week before, which I didn't think was possible. In fact, I would go so far as to say that this was the second worst segment on WWE television all year. Second only to that horrific This Is Your Life segment on Raw with Alexa Bliss and Bayley. I cannot in good conscience put this ahead of that one. This was not as bad as that. But you know you've reached a new low when the fans start a That Was Too Far chant. This segment was so bad, WWE did not even bother to upload it to their own YouTube channel. They uploaded everything else to their YouTube channel. This segment did not make the cut, as well it should not have. They should be ashamed for even putting this on TV. Oh, but Solomonster, he's being a good heel. He's getting heat. The segment was shit. This entire feud has been shit. This entire feud has turned off the TV heat with me. Come to think of it, so did Jinder's feud with Randy Orton. At what point does WWE realize or admit that this is simply not working? It was handicapped right from the start. Here's a guy in Jinder Mahal, and I met Jinder. Really nice dude, and I don't doubt that he works his ass off. Most guys in that company work their ass off. So does Jinder. But here's a guy who for years, was booked as a perennial jobber to the stars in this company. Not just during his first run, but even after he came back. After he came back, they had him losing to everybody on TV. And then came the superstar shakeup. And I don't know what it was. We can guess what it was. Vince took one look at the guy and said, "My God, look at Jinder. Why aren't we doing anything with this guy?" And just like that, he wins a battle royal on TV. And a few weeks later, he's the WWE champion. And at first, they got a lot of attention, right? They even got some mainstream pub out of it. And then another month went by, and another month went by, and another month went by. Bad pay-per-view match after bad pay-per-view match, that horrendous Punjabi I wish I was in prison match. And then a bad match at SummerSlam against Shinsuke Nakamura. They both deserve blame for that one, by the way. Nakamura doesn't get off easy for that one either. But a bad match with an even worse finish that's been done to death over the last 6 months. And now here we are in September going on October, with Jinder Mahal having already made history as the 50th WWE champion of all time, now more than 100 days into his title run. Not even Kane. I'm going back to the original Kane, the best Kane, classic Kane, the big red monster Kane, who didn't speak and looked scary as hell. Kane got a whopping 24 hours with that title and never held it again. Now, granted, he was the victim more of timing than anything else, because you had one of the biggest stars in the history of the business on that same show. So Kane, I mean, let's be honest, Kane was never going to hold that thing for that long anyway. But you look at a guy like that, if that Kane were around today, I'd put the title on him for a year. He looked the part, he played the part well, and people bought into him as a serious threat. Hell, I mean, if he were around now and couldn't speak, he'd probably be the one guy that I would say, let Paul Heyman do the talking for him, right? Let Heyman expand his clientele to include Kane. That's a money-drawing pairing right there. He's the only one I'd make that exception for. That's a monster heel who people could buy into. Not even he had as long with that title as Jinder Mahal has. My point is, it's been 4 months now, okay? And their centerpiece, the WWE Championship, is about as valuable right now at this moment as the television title from WCW. And that title's been dead for 17 years. Forget the racist jokes, okay? They weren't even that creative. That's not even what really offended me all that much. I'm offended. It's just bad TV that isn't entertaining. There's a scene from an episode of Seinfeld, and Jerry, his dentist, Walter White, converts to Judaism. so that he can make Jewish jokes. And Jerry goes to confession to talk to the dentist's priest, I think it was. And he says, I think my dentist has converted purely for the jokes. And the priest asks him, and this offends you as a Jewish person? And Jerry says, no, it offends me as a comedian. It's bad enough that they feel they have to go down this road here to get this feud over, but it's not even funny. You know, Vince McMahon says, we make movies. We don't do wrestling. We make movies every week. Well, if this was a movie, it would have a rotten rating on Rotten Tomatoes. Maybe what this movie needs is a new director. So I ask myself, what is the end game here? Right? Because for the most part, I mean, Jinder has his fans. But for the most part, people don't buy into him as the champion. I don't hate the guy. I just don't buy into him in that role. He is not the right guy for that role. The title has not made the man, as they would say. If anything, and I've said this from the beginning, it would have made far more sense if you're going to push the guy and you want to do the tired old evil foreigner shtick to put the U.S. title on him and get heat that way. I could buy him at that level. He and the Singh brothers could be a solid act at that level. I had the same idea when Rusev won the U.S. title. Another one doing the evil heel foreigner shtick. For the life of me, I couldn't understand why the minute he won that championship, they didn't have him and Lana rechristen it as the Russian Federation title. You know, put little side plates on it with Putin's face on it or something. Or just resurrect the old European title in its place. Dust it off for a year, you know? And then have John Cena as the conquering American hero finally dethrone him and restore the U.S. title to all its glory. They could have done something similar with Jinder, since this whole gimmick is putting down America. That's his whole thing. But the Jinder Mahal experiment is not working. Does that have anything to do with these smaller houses that they've been drawing? I'd say that's probably part of it. I don't think you can really say that one person, like back in the day, you'd put the name on the marquee, Hulk Hogan or whoever, and you could say this person draws, this person doesn't. I honestly don't even know anymore how much you can really lay that on the top guy of a brand. You probably can to an extent. I wouldn't put that all on him, but that certainly doesn't help, having him in that spot. And then there's Nakamura. How bad does this make Nakamura look 2 weeks in a row, being there live in the building and not having him come out to interrupt either one of these segments? He just takes it. He doesn't come out to defend himself, to defend the fans from having to sit through this nonsense. No, instead, we watch 10 minutes of this garbage, only to throw it to Renee Young backstage, with Nakamura, and a smile on his face, and then he speaks for all of 10 seconds, and then he walks away. The man is there. Why does he not come out to defend himself? Why does he not come out to beat the snot out of the Singh brothers and go after Jinder and have Jinder run away? How weak is this? How could they get it so right with Braun Strowman and Brock Lesnar on Raw and get it so wrong with Mahal and Nakamura on SmackDown? How? Explain that to me. It's the same company. Lesnar is in there with new opponents on Raw like Samoa Joe and Braun Strowman. That just works. And it works because the champion has credibility, something the champion on this show has none of. There's a reason why the formula seems to work on Raw and has not been working clearly on SmackDown. You don't have to look to the Attitude Era. You don't have to look to New Japan or some other promotion. All they have to do is look at what they're doing on their other show and learn from that. So meanwhile, the Washington Post went and did a whole story on that Jinder Mahal segment from Tuesday. WWE had to put a statement out about it. This did not need an entire story devoted to it in a newspaper like the Washington Post. I thought that was ridiculous. But hopefully it kicks WWE in the ass and forces them to try harder when it comes to trying to create compelling television for all audiences and not just an audience of one backstage. What a great segue into this Dolph Ziggler segment. We're up to 3 weeks in a row of no Bobby Roode on this show. I guess they really want the big reaction when he finally does come out. Unfortunately for all of us, that means we had to sit through another one of these cringeworthy segments here. He made an entrance as Triple H, then he did his usual gimmick and came back out dressed as Shawn Michaels. Then he came out to the DX music with green glow sticks. He said the fans don't give a damn about in-ring performance. All they care about are fancy entrances. Fans chanted CM Punk at him throughout the entire segment. You know, him dressing as Punk, some of you have suggested that that would be the dirt worst, because all it would do is resurrect those dumb CM Punk chants every week. That, and I already think they blew it. They blew it already because they should have had Bad News Barrett come out dressed as Punk after he left. It was like I forgot what show it was, but maybe it was when Raw came to Chicago. This would have been only a few months after Punk walked out. That would have been the perfect moment to have Barrett come out with the hood, right, and then whip the hood back and everyone sees it's not Punk. He would have gotten nuclear heat for that. It still burns me that they didn't do that. Now it would just be, you know, 3 years too late. This segment sucked. Randy Orton pinned Aiden English again. As soon as the match ended, Rusev came out. He had an impromptu match with Orton. And after English distracted Orton by jumping up on the apron, that led to a distraction roll-up pin in 10 seconds and a win for Rusev, who proceeded to celebrate like he had just won the Powerball jackpot. Well, I mean, hey, at least he finally won a match, right? So that's something. I think Rusev in the back celebrating his big win and talking about how he was going to go home as a hero now, I thought that was amusing. Rusev, you want to know what? Rusev should be the one in the role that Jinder Mahal is in right now. They picked the wrong evil foreigner to be the WWE champion. AJ Styles and Baron Corbin never got started after Ty Dillinger ran down before the bell and attacked Corbin, who was selling a sprained ankle after the assault. Could not put any weight on his leg. Styles hit him with a forearm and locked him in the calf crusher. Match never got started. This has to be leading to a three-way, I would think, for the U.S. title at Hell in a Cell. And if so, I like that. I think it'll be a better match having Dillinger in there. And it gets him a spot on the pay-per-view. Shane McMahon actually opened the show with an in-ring promo threatening vengeance upon Kevin Owens inside Hell in a Cell. They later had an interview via satellite with Owens, who was wearing a suit and tie. He apologized for what he did to Vince McMahon the week before. He doesn't know what came over him. He also said that Shane had this coming. It was all Shane's fault for all the times that Shane screwed him over. He said he has nothing but respect for Vince McMahon. In his mind, he was beating up Shane and not Vince. I like this because they didn't do the typical, like, heel swerve that they do where he says, I'm sorry, but I'm sorry I didn't headbutt your father even harder, right? Or something like that. In his mind, in the mind of Kevin Owens that we see here on SmackDown, he was totally justified in his actions. And it wasn't his fault. It was Shane's fault. You know, someone said to me on Twitter, it reminded him of Chris Jericho, when Chris Jericho had that heel run back in 2008, and it's so true. Like, what made that work so well is that Jericho, in his mind, was completely justified in doing what he did to Shawn Michaels, because Michaels was a liar. He was faking a knee injury. Jericho saw it. How come you people can't see it? This guy is not just a complete and total fraud, and he just could not understand how the fans could support a person like that. Why is he the good guy and I'm the bad guy? Right? The best heels are the ones who actually honestly believe what they're saying and they're not just spouting off BS. I think that's part of what makes this work so well. I think these two are going to go out there. I think they're going to have a great match because we've seen Shane deliver. Shane had what I thought ended up being a pretty good match, one of the best matches even on the card with AJ at WrestleMania this year. Now, he was in the ring with AJ. Well, Owens is no slouch. And I think you put the two of them on, I don't know if they're going to go on last or not, but they're going to be probably in the sole Hell in a Cell match on that show. They have the benefit of having the cage as a gimmick, all the smoke and mirrors, the weapons. Maybe we'll see some blood. We'll see. We already saw one McMahon bleed here in this feud. I think it's going to be a fun match. Only other thing of note on this show was the return of Charlotte back on TV for the first time since her dad nearly died. Ric Flair is doing better. He's been all over the media this week. He's blaming his years of drinking for all of his recent health issues. He now says he will never drink again. I can only imagine what this guy's liver must look like after all these years. Probably looks like one of those zombie heads on The Walking Dead after somebody's like blown its brains out. For his sake, I hope he's sincere. Maybe this will, you know, scare him into sobriety. Main event saw Charlotte win a fatal four-way match over Becky Lynch, Naomi, and Tamina. This did not go that long, but they made the most of the time that they had. Tamina hit a superfly splash on Becky, but Naomi broke up the pin. Lana pulled Naomi out of the ring and got kicked in the face for doing so. Tamina super kicked Naomi. Charlotte caught Tamina with a big boot, and then she got the win. So Charlotte now will challenge Crazy Cat Lady for the women's title at Hell in a Cell. If this week taught us one thing, it's that WWE is addicted to multi-person matches. Right? Ric Flair's out there saying, I'll never drink again. I wish WWE would wake up and say, enough with these multi-person matches. Like, there's a place for them. I like multi-person matches, but not every single week. Jason Jordan wins a six-pack challenge on Raw. Bayley gets added to what's now a fatal five-way tonight at No Mercy for the Raw women's title. Here we have Charlotte winning a fatal four-way to become the number one contender for the SmackDown women's title. And we had a triple threat tag team match on Raw Monday with Sheamus and Cesaro beating the Club and the Shield. I don't know about you, but that seems a little excessive to me. No Sami Zayn on this show again. He wins the award for sad tweet this week. Somebody tweeted Daniel Bryan asking him if he still wants to see Cesaro on SmackDown Live, to which he said, yeah, but I wanted Sami Zayn on SmackDown too, and that hasn't worked out as well as I thought it would. And Sammy himself, poor Sammy, he quoted Bryan's tweet and said, to say the least. You know, and people were worried about him getting lost in the shuffle on Raw. They were so excited to see Sammy get drafted. Well, I guess, is that even the right word? It wasn't a draft. It was a shakeup. So Sammy got shook and landed on SmackDown. And this is what it's come to. This is where we are now, all these months later. On the flip side of the coin, I saw on SEScoops.com that the IWGP champion Okada gave an interview to Yahoo Japan talking about a variety of different subjects. And this one tweet from, I want to make sure I get his name right here, Chris Charlton, translating parts of the interview. This one tweet had this quote from Okada. As a champion, as a technician, and in strength, Okada says that he believes he is the best in the world. For this era, he says, there can be nobody but me. We'll call that the cocky tweet of the week. He's not wrong. I mean, it's fine to be cocky as long as you can back it up, which he most certainly has this year with the string of matches that he's been able to put together. He's got my vote for the best in the world right now.
I'm actually not wearing pants, and that's how I watch NXT every single week.
Starting to feel a little bit better here. I feel like as I'm going on here, I'm getting a second wind. NXT. We had a tag team main event with Bobby Fish and Kyle O'Reilly taking on Tyler Bate and Trent Seven, the UK crew. Red Dragon wins with total elimination and the pin on Seven. Good match. Adam Cole was out there in Fish and O'Reilly's corner, and he hit Bate with a super kick outside, which led to the finish. Drew McIntyre, who defends the NXT title not this week but next week against Roderick Strong. I didn't make that mistake again. Not Rodney Mack. Came out. CFO bailed. Unfortunately for them, Sanity appeared. And a huge melee broke out, as Vince McMahon used to pronounce it. It's a melee. McIntyre beat up O'Reilly a little bit, but he never did get his hands on Adam Cole. And the three men scurried away. So that was the key match and key angle on the show. Some other things. Lars Sullivan beat No Way Jose. Sullivan, I've talked about him and praised him before. First time I think I ever mentioned him on the show was about 2 or 3 years ago. I had first gotten wind of this guy and what he looked like. And people saying he had all kinds of potential. And he's kind of this freak of nature. And I said, watch this Dylan Miley guy. You got to watch out for him. And so here he is, and he's starting to get the big push. And I think that this guy could be something. He needs a lot more time, though, down in NXT before they even think about moving him up to the main roster. And I know, look, you've got guys like Braun Strowman, who I was just praising earlier, right? He didn't even wrestle in NXT. He completely bypassed NXT. And when he hit the main roster, he had all of like 8 matches professionally in his entire life. And things have worked out pretty well for him. But NXT is a place where guys, I think, like Sullivan should stay as long as they need to stay to get better and get more polished. And eventually, he can be a monster heel. And I think even eventually a monster babyface, in that order, on the main roster. We had a quick backstage promo from Dakota Kai, who I guess she's officially signed. Per The Observer this week, Toni Storm and Piper Niven have not signed, but there is talk of them possibly signing a deal similar to the ones that have been given to the UK guys, who get to still wrestle indie dates, and if there's a UK show eventually, they would be used on there. And maybe the odd match here and there on NXT, but there's still talk of there being a WWE UK show. I mean, that's all well and good. If they bring Toni Storm in for that, then fine. But I still maintain that she could be the star of that entire division. Forget the UK show. That may or may not even happen. Like, she needs to be signed, sealed, and delivered. Because that girl has star written all over her. Bianca Belair, speaking of women who have a lot of star potential, she beat Lacey Evans. This actually was not really a good match. But when Belair uses that hair whip, boy, does that get a reaction. That livened the crowd right up. Belair won with the powerbomb where she gets her opponent up in a powerbomb position and just sort of falls backwards and they land face first. We also got to hear from Aleister Black for the first time on this show. 15 years it took him to get to NXT. It's kind of sad, actually, now that I think about it, right? 15 years just to get to NXT? What's he been doing wrong? The Velveteen Dream, of all people, interrupted him and was talking some gibberish. And Aleister Black, he black masked the microphone right out of the Dream's hand. And then he dropped down to the mat and he sat there Indian style. So Velveteen Dream is looking down at him and he suddenly drops to his knees. And he crawled right up to Aleister Black's face like he was going to kiss him. For some reason, as soon as he dropped to his knees and started to get closer to Black, this excited all of the fans at Full Sail. They came alive. You would think that somebody was running down from the back off screen. That was the kind of reaction this got. Now, he didn't actually kiss him. He got close, and then he slid out of the ring at the very last minute. But that was interesting. The fans got really excited. I don't know what these fans are looking for. Let's talk about Lucha Underground. Melissa Santos was actually wrestling this week for the first time, and so therefore my boy, Famous B, was out there handling the ring announcing with a broken arm. I like how Brenda was out there with him also with her arm in a sling after they were both attacked and had their arms broken by Pentagon. Famous B, of course, has been trying to recruit Tejano for some time now. It's no surprise that he tried to help him win in his match with Dante Fox by announcing him the winner, even though Tejano had only gotten a two count after a backbreaker. Fox ended up rolling up a distracted Tejano for the win. A distraction roll-up finish here on Lucha Underground. Say it ain't so. Tejano goes to kill Famous B, but Dario Cueto stops him. And he says, look, I'm going to make a match for next week. It'll be Famous B against Tejano. And Famous B whines, he's got a broken arm. And Dario says, well, then I guess you can call it a handicap match. That one line was funnier than that entire Jinder Mahal promo from SmackDown. Also, if Famous B somehow finds a way to win that match, Dario said that he will basically give Tejano's Lucha Underground contract to Famous B. So I think we all know how this is going to end. Melissa Santos made her in-ring debut alongside Phoenix, and they took on Marty the Moth and Mariposa. This looked like it was edited more than usual when Melissa was in there, so I can imagine what it looked like live. But from what I saw here, you know, she looked capable. I mean, she looked great, obviously, but in the ring, she looked capable. This was not her first match, either. I wasn't sure. I looked it up. She apparently has wrestled as part of a tag team many years ago in a, I think it was maybe an all-women's promotion. So this was not technically her first wrestling match. But I don't believe she's done any wrestling recently. And she won't be now since she's got Baby Cage on the way. So I suspect that we won't be seeing her wrestle for a very long time. Mariposa tied Phoenix to the rope. She and Marty won with a double team pedigree. They pedigreed Melissa Santos as Phoenix watched on helplessly. They got the pin. Marty went to go cut Melissa's hair, but Phoenix broke free and ran them off. Tough to watch your girl get beat up like that if you're Phoenix, but it's a good way to add heat to their mask versus hair match at Ultima Lucha. Pentagon and Son of Havoc both won. They both had their hands raised in the Gift of the Gods title match after Pentagon hit a package pile driver on Paul London and Son of Havoc pinned Mala Suerte at the same time. It was London, Saltador, Mala Suerte, Cortez Castro, Drago, Son of Havoc, and Pentagon Dark here in this match. So, you know, you got two winners. Dario comes out, he says, well, we're going to have a match at Ultima Lucha to settle this once and for all. It'll be Pentagon against Son of Havoc in a ladder match for the Gift of the Gods championship. In fact, we now have the full lineup for Ultima Lucha, which starts this coming Wednesday. It is the first of four straight weeks of Ultima Lucha. We have a steel cage match pitting Dragon Azteca Jr. against the monster Matanza Cueto. We've got Katrina taking on Ivelisse, which I thought that they had just dropped. I was very surprised when I saw this match announced. I think Ivelisse has been injured and just has been a non-factor on the show, and Katrina's had her own storyline going with the gauntlet and all that stuff, so I did not expect this match, so I guess we're going to get it. Hair versus Mask, Phoenix against Marty the Moth Martinez. Last Lucha... Actually, I should be doing predictions here, shouldn't I? I think the cage match, I'll pick Matanza, Katrina, and Ivelisse. I got to go with my girl Katrina. Hair versus Mask, Phoenix against Marty the Moth. Marty the Moth is going to be bald, I predict, when that match is over. Last Luchadora standing, Taya takes on Sexy Star. Hopefully Taya wins. That's all I'll say about that. We have the Hell of War match, which is basically a three stages of hell between Dante Fox and Killshot. I'm going to go with Killshot as the winner. We have Tejano against Famous B. I think Famous B will find a way to pull it out in the end, and he'll have himself a new client. Cage, they call him Cage, I should say, taking on Mil Muertes and Jeremiah Crane in a literal gauntlet match. Literally, the winner gets the gauntlet. I never thought I'd be able to say that, but that's what it is. It is a literal gauntlet match. This one's tough. This is tougher. You know, it's hard to say. I don't... Yeah, who is going to win this match? That's a really good question. I think it's going to be Cage or Mil Muertes. I'm trying to figure out who it'll... You know what? I'm going to go with Cage. I think Cage gets the gauntlet back. That's my pick. Gift of the Gods Championship Ladder Match. Pentagon Dark against Son of Havoc. I'm going to go with Pentagon Dark. And we have the main event. Lucha Underground Championship Match with Johnny Mundo defending his title against Prince Puma. And if Puma loses, his career is over in Lucha Underground. I know that Ricochet has one foot out the door here, and so I'm going to assume that he's losing this match and his career is coming to an end. And so, apparently Mundo may be gone too. I see Mundo now is on Impact. I don't know what's going on with these guys. They both look like they're out the door. This is like their version of Goldberg and Brock from WrestleMania 20. Although, I'm sure the crowd won't shit all over it. I'm going to go with Mundo. I think Mundo retains the championship and Puma takes his exit. So those are my predictions for Ultima Lucha. The show ended, by the way, this week with Dario Cueto in a limousine outside the temple with his FBI friend, who, as we know, is not really an FBI agent. He's one of these alien people from another dimension, I guess, in disguise. And Dario has the gauntlet, and he tells both the FBI guy and the supreme boss who's in the limo, whose face we never see. All we see is him lighting up a cigar. I still, in my head, picture... The evil boss from Inspector Gadget, Dr. Claw from Inspector Gadget, probably stroking a little cat. Dario informs them both that he's booked Cage against Mil Muertes against Jeremiah Crane for the gauntlet at Ultima Lucha, and that Muertes or Crane would make fine hosts for whatever their diabolical plan is to, I guess, resurrect the gods. It sounds like they don't want Cage to win, which is part of the reason why I think he will. But apparently shit's about to go down. I don't know what, but it's going down. I just hope they wrap this story up by the end of Ultima Lucha, because if there is no season 4 and they just leave this story hanging with no resolution, I'm going to be pissed. Let's get to your mailbag questions. If you have questions, you can always send them to me. TheSolemonster@gmail.com. Please include your name and where you are from when you write in. One follow-up to a question that somebody had last week, and this is kind of weird, actually. Somebody would ask me about this. The all-women's promotion that was being started by Brittany Page and Lacey Von Erich and Brooke Hogan. And nothing new had really been said about it in many months. And I talked about it last week. And then all of a sudden this week, it just so happens, and I had no idea she was even going to be on the show, but Lacey Von Erich was a guest on Steve Austin's podcast, and she was talking about her dad, and I guess it came up. She dropped some news on this all-women's league project that I was asked about last week. By the way, I never did hear anything back from Brittany Page, but Lacey didn't really have a whole lot to share either. She said a lot of it is still secret. I guess it's locked up in Area 51 or something. She said the whole thing is still in the works. She won't be wrestling, but they have no time frame as to when this thing is going to start. Right now they're trying to figure out how they want to handle the live shows. You know, if the model is just live shows and no TV, I'm not sure how they expect this thing to survive. But we'll see. You know, Jeff Jarrett found out with GFW just how hard it is to get a TV deal. And without one, you're pretty much a dead duck. Unless you're PWG with a building in Reseda and you're able to bring in big indie names for a lot of your shows, then you'll be okay. Let's see here. AJ from Tucson, Arizona. I'm curious to get your take on John Cena's rant on locker room complacency on the Edge and Christian podcast. He says, nobody has stepped up to, quote, bring out the best in Roman, unlike me. Did he forget AJ Styles brought that out of Roman last year? Cody Rhodes, in his recent Talk is Jericho interview, said that John Cena was never in the locker room and goes to his bus after his segments are done. Please address this. Yeah, I heard about that interview. I heard about Jericho and Cody, I think, talking about, what was it, Cena's spaceship or something like that. I did not hear all of the John Cena interview on Edge and Christian. I only heard parts of it. So I'm commenting on what I heard, but also I read the transcript and I assume that what I read is accurate. You say rant, I don't know if he was ranting and raving, but I heard, read about him talking about the locker room and how nobody steps up and all that kind of thing. And look, you know, from his perspective, I don't doubt that he believes that. You know, Cena's in a very plum position in that company. It's not a situation, I think, where he has to be terribly concerned about losing his spot if he speaks up about something that he feels passionately about. But I find it funny. I go back to the interview that Vince McMahon did. That Vince McMahon interview on Steve Austin's podcast on the network, that thing is going to live on forever, okay? And I thought it was very telling, and I'll still go back to that all these years later. It's been a few years now. When he was talking about Cesaro, you know, and grabbing the brass ring and all of that stuff, and he made the comment during the interview with Steve Austin. Because Austin said, look, these guys walk around on eggshells. They're afraid to speak out or stand up for themselves. And Vince has the famous quote of, don't piss anybody off. That was like his answer to one of the questions that Austin asked, like, don't piss anybody off. And you get these conflicting messages about how you should stand up and you should speak out. But then you have the owner of the company, the guy who runs the show, saying, don't piss anybody off. And we know how easily people go, how overly sensitive these people can be. All it takes, you look at somebody wrong. You look at them cross-eyed. And you can be buried. Like, you don't know what's going to happen. So, of course, people are concerned, and they're going to do everything they can to keep their head down and do what's asked of them. And even if it's something that they really don't want to do, there are guys, I'm sure, who do speak out. There are guys who, I'm sure, have better relationships than others with Vince McMahon. You know, Jinder, when I talked to Jinder Mahal at the 2K event, I asked him, I go, well, how has your relationship changed with Vince? He goes, it's like night and day. He goes, before, Vince was this intimidating guy. I couldn't even think to go up to him. And now he and I have this great relationship. And he's the first person I talk to when I get to the back. And okay, but again, when you have the owner of the company saying, don't piss anybody off, is it any wonder why people are afraid to speak up? It's easy for somebody like John Cena to say that he doesn't have to worry about that. You know, so I can understand Cena, you know, thinking that way, but that, I don't know that his opinion is completely based in reality. I've heard so many stories about Vince likes that. Vince likes to be challenged, and he wants people to knock on his door and all this other stuff. But, you know, when you have Vince McMahon in his own words saying, don't piss anybody off, you know what I mean? It's like, why would you even say something like that? If he honestly wanted people to speak up, not to like revolt, but just to speak up more often. Maybe be a little more of a pain in the ass if there's a certain creative idea or whatnot that they're not happy with. He wouldn't be out there saying, don't piss anybody off. How do you reconcile that? What John Cena says to what Vince McMahon himself is on film as having said. It doesn't make sense. It's easy for John Cena to say. John Cena doesn't have to worry about pissing anybody off. A lot of those guys on the roster, though, they're not John Cena. They don't sell the tickets that John Cena sells. They don't sell the t-shirts that John Cena sells. They don't fly all over the world like John Cena does. They're not the face of the company like John Cena is. So they are expendable. Really, everybody in this company is expendable. There is no one person that this company will die without. Even Vince McMahon. But if you looked at the roster and you had to say, who is the closest thing to somebody who you would consider to be expendable? Who is the closest thing where if, God forbid, something happened to them, or they just decided to retire and they left, or they had a falling out, or whatever, who would do the most damage by no longer being around? It's John Cena. You could say Roman Reigns, you could say Brock Lesnar, all of them, I think the company would be worse off right now for them not being around, but, you know, Cena is that guy, so it's very easy for him to make comments like that. I got a question here from Tom. Didn't write here where he's from, but he wanted to know my thoughts on the amped footage. So basically, when Jeff Jarrett was trying to get a TV deal for GFW, and this is now going back 2-3 years at this point, maybe a little less, they had tapings in, I think it was Las Vegas, and they taped all these episodes, all these weeks of television that ended up not even being used because they couldn't get a friggin' TV deal. At the time, though, they had a lot of people, you know, at the tapings representing GFW who have now gone on to WWE and NXT, people like Bobby Roode and Eric Young and even some others, even, I think, Anderson and Gallows. So they have all this footage that was never used, and now they're starting to roll it out, right? And clips are starting. I don't know if they just put it on YouTube or if it's just going to be on their new streaming platform, but they're rolling out, they're using this GFW amped footage. Maybe not now, since they're not using the GFW name anymore, I don't know. But what they did was, on one of the shows where Bobby Roode appeared, they actually dubbed over the commentary, because the commentary now is so freaking old, it's so dated, that they felt they had to dub over it to update it. Otherwise, it really, I mean, you think Lucha Underground being in the can for months on end, that, you know, sometimes things can be dated. I mean, that, this GFW amped stuff was, you know, taped like a lifetime ago. But in the commentary, one of the announcers made a comment to the effect of, you know, and Bobby Roode, you know, he was the NXT champion, and then he used the word jump, like he made the jump. Basically insinuating that Bobby Roode, who was the NXT champion, has made the jump here to Global Force Wrestling. That, I don't care what anybody says, that is clearly what the intent of that was, to make people believe. And I just shake my head and, like, how stupid do they think people are? Seriously, I have no problem with them updating the commentary. But to insinuate, to, like, make it so current that you acknowledge that this guy has been the NXT champion, which he was up until only a matter, really, a couple months ago, and he's made the jump. Trying to make it seem like he's jumped from NXT, even though he's on SmackDown now, but he's jumped from WWE to GFW. As if, by the way. Okay? As if. But it's sad. I don't know what else there is to say. And for the people saying WWE can sue, I don't know about the legalities of all of it. I don't think WWE can do anything. I mean, I guess if WWE perceives that they're misleading their audience, there might be something there. That reminds me of what WCW was doing when Hall and Nash first came in and WWF sued because they're misleading their fans into believing that our contracted or our ex-talent is still working for us when they're really not. So I actually shouldn't say that WWE has no grounds to sue them. I guess they might be able to. But in terms of using the old footage, they own that footage. They could do whatever they want with it. So if they want to air the footage now, as dated as it is, it's their footage. They can do whatever they want to. You know, as far as that goes, WWE can't do a damn thing. But trying to mislead people into believing that so-and-so made the jump to GFW, that's just stupid. Nobody buys it anyway. But to do that is just so, it's so Bush League. You know what I mean? It's sad. We have Jono from Melbourne, Australia. How would you book Johnny Gargano against Tommaso Ciampa, and who would you put over? You know, it's hard to say. I mean, Ciampa's still many months away from coming back. I don't even know if he'll be back in time, before WrestleMania. Probably right before or right after, if his rehab goes well, is when we can expect him back. So we're still a long ways off from them resolving that feud, and I hope they do. I hope Gargano doesn't get, like, called up or anything, and then they can't do it. Because that's you know, even though it's going to be on ice for so long, that's going to be a hot feud. And I think you've got to involve Candice LeRae. I think if they have the balls to do it, I'm not saying you have Ciampa beat her up. Maybe somebody lays her out off screen and we don't see it and we come to find out that he had something to do with it. But I think Candice LeRae absolutely should be signed, I think, and should end up in the women's division in NXT. And they've already acknowledged that she's married to Johnny Gargano. That's been established already. I think to really make this thing personal, you've got to involve her in some way, or him terrorizing her in some way. So, you know, step by step, week by week, how would I do that? I don't know. I mean, I'd have to sit here and think about that. But, you know, as personal as it already is between those two, I think you need to involve her in some way. As far as who goes over, I think Ciampa goes over. I think he has great potential as sort of the psychotic singles heel. Gargano loses nothing, I don't think, if he loses at the end of this feud. If I had to put one guy over and kind of move him up to that next level, it would be Ciampa. Keegan from Mississippi, since Mojo Rawley has made all of 4 TV appearances since winning the Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal, would you have had Strowman win the Battle Royal this year instead? Yes, I would have. And it confounds me that he and Big Show were dumped out as quickly as they were. Actually, I remember hearing that Big Show was very upset about that, that there was some kind of mess up and they were dumped out, you know, sooner than they were supposed to be. Because they were really building to something between him and Strowman in that match. And I think they had like a brief stare down. And then they just got dumped. And it's like Strowman, not only should he have been in there longer, he should have won the damn thing. But they had the guy from the Patriots, Gronkowski or whatever. And they wanted to do something with him and Jinder. And, you know, because he's friends with Mojo. And I think they wanted Gronkowski in for some kind of a match. And then the Patriots put the ixnay on that. You would think that they would have looked into this before the Battle Royal WrestleMania, but it didn't go anywhere. You're right. It went absolutely nowhere, and they were giving Mojo a little bit of a singles push, and then Zack Ryder came back, and he went right back to being in a tag team. So I look at the Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal as a complete waste of time. If they're not going to do anything with it, if it's not going to have any sort of meaning, then why even bother doing it? You know, Braun Strowman, the year that he's had, here he is now tonight challenging for the championship. You would have been able to point to that win in the Battle Royal at WrestleMania as like a great launching pad for this guy. And, you know, maybe next year somebody else will get the rub from winning the Andre Battle Royal. Instead, when next year rolls around, we're going to look back and see that Mojo fucking Rawley won the Battle Royal at WrestleMania. Who cares? Mason from Illinois. Would you say that Bill Goldberg is the greatest creation of WCW? Despite the popularity of Ric Flair and the NWO, they were all made superstars by that point from their work in the NWA, AWA, and WWE. Sting became the face of WCW, but still had to take inspiration from outside with his Crow persona. Goldberg was an all-original WCW creation who rose from obscurity to superstardom, and his popularity continues to resonate today. Should Goldberg be considered the greatest creation of WCW? Yes. Yes, he should. And the most successful, too, business-wise. I would put Goldberg number one. I would say DDP is right behind him. I think Goldberg and DDP were really the only two stars that were made during that Monday Night War period. Sting was already a star. Flair was already a star. Hogan was already a star. Who did WCW really make? Right? In terms of just original talent from scratch, it was Goldberg and DDP in that order. We have an audio question here, and this comes to us from Jay.
This is Jay Raphael. Who do you think was his biggest own worst enemy? Like, the name that comes to mind for me would be William Regal, because in 2008, the guy was red hot, and he was on the verge of becoming probably the world champion, and he just didn't pull it off because of his problems with drugs and stuff. right? So for me, it would be William Regal. What about you?
It sounds like you may have some problems with drugs and stuff with those sirens blaring. No, I kid, Jay. Who is their own worst enemy? Lots of guys in wrestling have been their own worst enemy. Too many people. Regal's a good one. I'm with you in that. I think he would have had a run with the World Heavyweight title on SmackDown when the brands were split up the first time. That was around the time he had that run as the Raw GM, and it was the hottest run of his career around that 2007-2008 period. That was the one time I looked at him and thought, this man could be world champion. But, you know, Regal, I wouldn't put Regal at the top of the list or anything. I mean, it's hard to narrow down, you know, to just one person. When I think of people who were their own worst enemy and who, you know, jeopardized bigger runs than the ones they even had, I think of Jimmy Snuka. Not just because he probably killed his girlfriend. That didn't help. But he had a lot of drug issues, and lots of times the company had to bail him out of jams that he would get himself into, but he was totally unreliable. Had he been reliable, and had he not had those issues, as popular as he was at his peak in the early 80s, he could have been the WWF champion. I think of Scott Hall and all of his issues with alcohol. Now, Hall was still a huge star, but imagine if he was sober. Imagine if he was of sound body and mind throughout his career. Right? He could have, I think he could have been even bigger. World champion? Maybe. You know, maybe, but I just think he would have had an even more productive run than the one he had, and he'd probably be in the business right now actively contributing were it not for all of those issues, but again, he was his own worst enemy. The third person I think of is Teddy Hart. Now, there's a guy, he's got the Hart family name, he's got loads of talent. He was signed to a WWE developmental deal. I think he might, at the time anyway, he was the youngest ever to sign a developmental deal, who had a piss-poor attitude. They let him go. Trouble seemed to just follow him wherever he went. I remember the incident in Ring of Honor, like it was yesterday. That pissed a lot of people off at the time. A lot of wrestlers were very upset with him. That was when he went into business for himself in a match. And he did like a shooting star press off the top of a steel cage onto a bunch of wrestlers down below, which is insanely dangerous, especially when people aren't ready for it. So that was a very memorable incident in ROH. And I think his claim at the time was he was concussed and didn't know what he was doing, whatever. But he's bounced around a lot of places since then, just never got a big break on the national stage. By all accounts, if he had his head on straight, he could have been a big star. Now, I think he still wrestles indies. He's got his cats, right? Or is it his cat? It may just be one cat. I may be confusing him with Natty. Natty has multiple cats. Teddy has his cat. Will Ospreay is a cat. Hopefully I've got that right. And now I see clips of a shoot interview that I guess he did with Sean Oliver not too long ago, where he blames Bret Hart punching out Vince McMahon in Montreal for all of his problems. It's like, well, you know, I didn't become a big star and all these other things happened, and it all goes back to Bret punching out Vince McMahon. Even though in the same clip that I watched, he floats the idea that the whole thing in Montreal was a work. Somehow him knocking out Vince, though, in Montreal is what led to the downfall of Teddy Hart. Like, this guy is living in his own world. He truly is his own worst enemy. And we will end here with a non-wrestling buy or sell from David in Chicago. And this is a very tough one. Who is the better actor, Al Pacino or Robert De Niro? That's a tough one. As buy or sells go that I've done here on this show, that's one of the toughest. I'm going to buy on De Niro, and I'm going to sell on Pacino. And I'm a huge fan of Al Pacino's movies, right? I mean, the Godfather, everyone's going to mention The Godfather and The Godfather Part 2 and all that. But, you know, Dog Day Afternoon, Scarface, which I'm a big Scarface fan, Serpico, Heat. Heat is one of my all-time favorite movies. And De Niro is in that one as well. In fact, they're the two main characters in the movie. One of the all-time great, if not the all-time great, shootout scene in a movie is in that film after the bank robbery. the main knock on Pacino is that he's always Al Pacino, right? In every movie he ever does. He never really changes. He's always basically the same person. He's always basically the same character. He's a great actor. He's intense. But he's always Al Pacino. De Niro, you know, De Niro's played a lot of different roles in drama, comedy. I mean, he's really run the gamut. I actually enjoyed those Meet the Parents movies. Analyze this, analyze that. But you've got Taxi Driver, you've got Raging Bull, you've got A Bronx Tale, Goodfellas, Casino, Heat, like I mentioned. Cape Fear was another one. He was really creepy in Cape Fear. The Fan, that's another movie I kind of like. I got to give De Niro the edge on this one. But, you know, it is kind of scary how closely their careers mirror one another, especially with all the crappy films they've made late in their careers. Like, they're like two wrestlers who should have retired 20 years ago but couldn't help themselves or just had to make money or something, and they just kept wrestling, right? No matter how bad the matches are, they just keep going. And every now and then there may be a gem in there. Like, I'm trying to think if there was anything really good I saw either one of them in recently, but I can't think of anything. The only thing I think of is that awful movie that they were in with 50 Cent. Oh, I forgot the name of it. It was awful, though. It was so bad. And I think Pacino, right, did that movie 88 Minutes. It's like, ugh, just hang it up, you know? But two of the best actors of our or any generation, I got to give the edge to De Niro. All right, we'll wrap up the mailbag here. We've gone about 2 hours and 20 minutes. Long show this week. I actually feel better now than I did when I first started the show. It's like the show has been like a five-hour energy burst for me here. So if you have questions, you can email me, thesolemonster@gmail.com. I am scheduled once again to be joining Wade Keller on the Pro Wrestling Torch, this week on his Podcast One show, the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast, to talk about SmackDown Live. That will be available for download then on Wednesday on Podcast One. So that is the current plan. Spread the word on that. The first show we did apparently did pretty good, so let's do it again. I look forward to it. Also, don't forget, No Mercy. I will have a review up on the YouTube channel later tonight, early tomorrow morning. That will be up exclusively as an extra on YouTube. It will not be pushed out to the feed. If you would like to download it or stream it, the link is always in the video description, but you've got to go to the video on YouTube for that. And so that's something to look forward to later tonight. I am looking forward to those two main events. I think it's going to be a good show. I am bullish on the pay-per-view tonight. So we'll be back with a brand new podcast. That'll be episode 515 next weekend as we march ever so closer to our 10-year anniversary here coming up this November. I want to thank everybody for all of your continued support, all of your well wishes for Mama Monster as well. These are not the easiest weeks right now, but we're doing the best we can. But we appreciate all of the well wishes. And that's it. That's all I got. I'll see you tonight for the No Mercy review. Enjoy the show, and we'll be back for a brand new podcast next weekend. Until then, take care, guys.
The good, the bad, and the ugly. The Solomonster sounds off.
Mundo goes to leave, and Taya says, "Wait, aren't you going to put any pants on?" He just goes, "No time for pants," and he walks off. That also happens to be Randy Orton's philosophy in life. My philosophy, too. You see, you don't know if I'm wearing pants right now or not, do you? You can't see. I could be wearing nothing right now for all you know. No time for pants.
Solomonster sounds off. Since 2007, the Solomonster sounds off. Available at thesolomonster.com, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, iTunes, and more.
Solomonster sound off.